Okay, make sure that everybody can hear out in
TV land.
TV land. Mrs. McNeil now.
Is it?
True.
Okay. Welcome to the Wednesday night, March 25th, Board of Directors meeting for the Oceano Community Services District. Can I get a roll call vote, please? Celia.
Director Angelou.
Here.
Director Blackburn.
Here.
Director Guerrero.
Here.
Vice President White.
Here.
President Lucy.
Here. Thank you. Would everybody like to join me in a flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mayor.
All right. Okay, let's have an agenda review. Is there any changes to the agenda, additions that could fit on this tight agenda? I like it when it's busy.
President Lucy, a couple of just protocol recommendations.
Right.
We have a number of items in the discussion portion of the agenda tonight.
Correct.
All of which are going to either have presentations or some more extensive public comment. And for tonight, for simplicity reasons, rather than trying to split which ones we'll take individual public comment on which ones we won't, I'd recommend we just simply go through them one at a time and take public comment on each of the items as we get to them. With respect to the agenda itself, Celia does have a modified recommendation for the March 11th minutes.
Okay, so we want to pull the March 11th out of the consent?
Well, I think that if Celia is ready to just summarize the modifications really quickly, and then the appropriate board action after public comment would be to approve the consent agenda as modified.
All right, so... So right before we do, I'll call consent agenda, and you can list the changes,
okay.
And then we'll I'll entertain a motion.
That would work.
How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay, very good. Okay, so let's start off with number 5, public comment on matters that are not on the agenda tonight.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker. And my first thought, as I was driving down here and I saw trains on the track, I thought, rail spur. And an idea I have for you guys is to form an ad hoc committee to evaluate the impacts of the rail spur project on your district. And then you'll be ready when the Planning Commission asks for comments or participation at that time. I think that would be prudent. There was an article in Calcos News last week. A number jumped out at me, and it was quoted by your administrative assistant, Marie McGrath, that the end of June 2014, your water fund had $369,765. The audited financials of June 2013 say you had $58,025. So there's a considerable difference from one year end to the next year end, and I'll grant that the 14 hadn't been audited or hasn't, we haven't seen that audit. But it concerns me that you would have such an increase from year end to year end if your rates were not keeping up with your expenses. So maybe that'll be touched on later in the agenda, but if the money's coming in and you have reserves that are I thought $369,000 was a lot by comparison to certainly the year before. So that concerned me. And then kind of thrown in your rate analysis that Mr. Ogren put together back earlier this month, and what went out in the notice for the rate increase. The number 878,223 was your financial reserves at the end of the 2014 fiscal year, and projected to be $619,649 at the end of June 15. And again, we haven't seen the audit to know how on target those numbers are, and I think they're very concerning, and I'll be interested in your conversation later tonight.
Thank you. Anybody else like to do public comment?
Thank you. My name is Beatrice Spencer. I'm an Arroyo Grande resident. In March of 2011, the OCSD board approved a rate increase, and it's my understanding that none of those funds went to improving infrastructure. Recently, this board again voted to increase rates, and it's again my understanding that this new rate increase will not be used for improvements. This board's actions have led to a downgraded rating of county bonds issued to fund improvements to Lopez Dam. And as far as I'm concerned, this board's ability to make financially flawed decisions is just that. It's your decision until it affects me. The fact that this district system's liquidity position is, quote, weak, end quote, according to the S&P report, makes this my business as an Arroyo Grande ratepayer. I hope you understand how your financial decisions affect all of us. We have every right to question the decisions which have brought this district to this point. According to a recent grant application, this district loses between 83 and 136 acre-feet of water per year due to structural failures. I'd like for someone on this board to explain how this financially strapped district can afford to allow this to continue. How does this board justify a rate increase that does nothing to improve a system that has not been properly maintained for 60 years? I would also ask that this board explain why there has not been one payment made on the 2013 loan of $770,000 from the general fund. What is the district's plan for repayment if it does not follow the repayment plan established when the money was loaned? Your ratepayers deserve answers to these questions, and the residents of neighboring cities affected by your questionable financial decisions are waiting as well. You are our neighbors, and you're becoming a very bad neighbor when what you do quickly affects the rest of us negatively. In closing, I find it disturbing that Mr. Guerrero would consider hiring Mr. Ogren to bring this district a lot of credibility, quote, end quote. How is that so? Having your financial house in order makes you credible. Repairing decrepit infrastructure makes you credible. Agreeing to a salary and hiring Mr. Ogren when the district does not have the financial means to justify his contract is not credible. Ratepayers have a right to know, what is this board's plan to right the wrongs? How are you going to fix the mess you've helped create? Thank you.
And thank you. Anybody else? Great. Okay.
Wait a minute. Shirley's getting up.
Oh, Sherry. Hi.
Shirley Gibson, Helena Street, Halcyon. And I had two issues I wanted to talk about tonight. And the first one is that at these district meetings, there are three basic groups in attendance. The board, which is elected by the residents/voters within the OCSD boundaries, and I'm one of those voters. Number two, the GM, attorney, board secretary, et cetera, which I call staff. And number three, the audience, mostly members of the public. My concern is the behavior of some of the audience during meetings. My expectation during meetings is a silent, respectful audience. And to that end, quiet means no whispering or visiting, no laughing, no theatrics, no shouting, no talking from your seat, no bad language. The time for comments and or opinions is during public comment, just like I'm doing. Everybody has that opportunity. As a voting resident of the district, I come to these meetings to hear what is being said. And if people are talking, I can't hear. I am 65 and getting Medicare. The other thing I wanted to mention was what I see the district working on. And I'm kind of speaking to the local public out there that doesn't necessarily attend these meetings, but they do watch it on TV. And sometimes I'd rather be watching a Woody Woodpecker cartoon than sitting through a meeting, but nevertheless, I'm here. Number one, I see the district dealing with the deficit in the water fund. And I can't speak for anyone else, but I do support the raise in the water rates. I know that's being discussed later. Number two, the other big issue I see them dealing with is the drought. And they're planning a multi-year water strategy with their state Lopez and groundwater. I think that is, you know, should be number one on our list, the drought. Number three, I see that they have vision in working with the fire authority and working with the sand district on a recycled water program. And I think that's got to be up at the top of the list, too. My husband and I moved here in 1999, kind of via Arroyo and San Luis, and then we moved to Halcyon. I have survived six or seven general managers and several boards. And I think that this is the best and most effective board and general manager we have had in over 15 years.
Excuse me, can somebody from Oceano Halcyon please have the respect and not talk in the back of the room? We're really asking you to be respectful of our issues. Sally, would you please stop her clock, please?
I did.
Okay. I'm sorry, Shirley.
Okay. The general manager is well paid, and I made some complaints about that in previous meetings. But I think he is important to the success of the district. Besides managing and accounting skills, he has years of experience working with numerous county, state agencies, and different ordinances that can only be a benefit to our district. So thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Gibson. All right. I really would like to reiterate the respect that we show for others when they're speaking at the mic and when people from the district are trying to hear and others are trying to hear what's going on. Yes,
my turn?
Yes, your turn.
Thank you. My name is April McLaughlin, and I am a Five Cities resident. The item that I wish to speak to that is not on the agenda is the way that the meeting was run last time, and how we don't follow the agenda here, and how difficult it is for the general public to know when to speak or when not to speak. And so just running down the timeline real quick, at 19 minutes into the meeting, it was asked if anyone had any public comment on consent agenda items. The man who was presenting for 10A came up and spoke and was then told, now's not your time to speak, sit down because you're presenting. So then Julie then came up and spoke on items 10B and 10C, as was the time to do it. At 35 minutes into the meeting, it was asked, do we have any more public comment? All right, hearing none, we're going to move right along. The meeting continued. At a 1 hour, 11 minutes into the meeting, item 10B, a motion was passed and done. At 1 minute, 35 minutes into the meeting, President Lucy leaves the dais to use the little ladies' room, to quote her, and at 1:37 she returns and says that a member of the public was unclear of when they should be speaking to item 10B on the agenda. President Lucy's quote is, someone from the public wanted to speak on it and we flew by it because under public comment we only allowed for questions for 10A. That is untrue. In the end, she was quoted as saying, sometimes we all get confused. Well, when you don't follow your own agenda and you make it a fluid subject, apparently, instead of an actual document to follow, it does get confusing. After 10 years of being in this arena, I would think that you could run a meeting a little better. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comment from the public? No? Hearing none. Mr. Lieberman. I think you're up.
Chief
Lieberman, excuse me. Sure, I'll read about it in the newspaper.
Good evening, President Lucy, members of the board, staff, and community. I'm Steve Lieberman. I'm your fire chief. I'm also joined by Ricky Heath, your battalion chief with the Five Cities Fire Authority, your local fire department. And what I want to share with you this evening is what started out as a pretty brief 90-day observation presentation that I shared with the fire board, and I'm sharing with you and the two city councils in our service area. After our last fire board meeting, the fire authority board members asked that I show you the detailed presentation, and I'll try to make it as quick as I can, but definitely encourage you to ask questions. So I'm going to buzz through this, but the mission of the Five Cities Fire Authority is to provide the highest level of service possible while meeting the growing needs of our communities. Volumes and trends that we're seeing. We're definitely seeing a consistent growth in our call volume year over year, and increasing service calls are driving what we call demand and capacity. And a lot of what that really boils down to is simultaneous calls for service. As you know, we have three fire stations serving the district, and there's been an increase, and we're going to statistically start tracking that of simultaneous calls or when all three engine companies are committed to calls and that fourth call for service comes in. You know, one of the contributing factors and I am a baby boomer, so I have to out myself, is the silver tsunami. And the silver tsunami is a national trend and concern starting at the public health level and trickling down to local government and impacting the EMS system as well. The boomer generation is retiring, and as they get older, their health needs are going to increase, and it just is putting a strain on the whole medical system, including EMS delivery. Service area, we serve, as you know, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Halcyon, and Oceano, a population of roughly 37,000 people. So we talked about we're an all-hazards fire department. So what does that really mean to me, and what does it mean to the community? Is you have a police department that does law enforcement and life safety, and you have a fire department that does a lot of other things. You know, we're doing EMS. We're obviously your fire department. But rope rescue, confined space rescue, good intent calls, you know, as simple as taking care of our community members that are having health challenges and need help back into bed. I mean, there's got to be someone to help them, and we're that agency. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the history of how we got to where we are today, I just kind of wanted to run you through a very quick timeline. It started in 2004 with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach deciding to share a fire chief and to share a training captain. In 2007, the agreement was expanded to include equipment sharing, apparatus sharing, and a reserve firefighter program. Also within that became what is known as the boundary drop. So instead of having our jurisdictional boundaries where a Grover Beach fire station stopped at Oak Park and Grand, it went to where that call of service was. So it traveled into Arroyo Grande, and vice versa, Arroyo Grande traveled into Grover Beach. In 2008, Oceano joined the agreement, and again, the boundary drop continued with what is now called Station 3, this fire station responding into both Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, the closest, nearest available resource, getting there in the fastest time possible. Obviously, we also had the chief officer continue, one fire chief, and also along the way, Chief Heath, who was a captain, was reclassified to battalion chief. In 2009, the councils and the district board come to consensus that we want to move forward with a consolidation. And with the JPA, with identified target date of 2010, and it happened on July 9th, 2010. So this July will be our five-year birthday. In 2014, as you know, benefit assessment mail by ballot, supplemental funding assessment went out, and it was unsuccessful. And here we are today. So again, just to share with you some of the efficiencies that were enjoyed when we brought our organizations together was fire chief. We reduced from 2.5 to 1. Administrative staff, we reduced. Boundary drops, I've already covered. Dispatch consolidation. So Arroyo Grande had a fire dispatch center, Grover Beach dispatch for both Grover and Oceano. we now are consolidated and dispatched by the Grover Beach Police Department. Fleet was downsized. We move apparatus around to cover stations. The Reserve Firefighter Program, we had three disparate programs. We have one now with uniform training standards, uniform recruitment. It's working really well, and our reserve, since they're employees of the authority, can be moved to whatever station we need reserve coverage at. And as you can imagine, by the consolidation, our overhead expenditures were reduced. So I don't know if you've ever heard of a SWOT analysis. It's this buzzword acronym in the corporate world, but it's really a quick and easy way to take a look at your organization, and this is a very high level one. It's not really detailed. But I just wanted to kind of share with you, based on my first 90 days with the organization, where I think we are. So you can see we have internal and external on the far left there, and then helpful and harmful, going back to the SWOT letters that you saw just a second ago. So what's great? What's great is you have a professional and well-trained organization. What's great is, I call it citizen-owned and operated. Of our full-time folks, over 90% of them live in our service area. And has been the story since this organization was formed. They're used to doing more with less. I always tell the story about, I can't fix a car for the life of me, but we've got folks in that department that are turning wrenches on fire engines, which is both a great thing because I'm jealous and they're saving us a lot of money, but at some level it gives me some anxiety in that we're not using a state-certified fire mechanic, which we certainly have access to for those larger repairs. So internal, things that we know, weaknesses, staffing levels. The fleet and our equipment is aging. And then long-term funding remains a challenge that needs to be resolved. Helpful community outreach. We're really trying to get out there and re-engage. Talking to service organizations, we're planning a large fire prevention and life safety event on October 10th. And we'll be getting the word out about that. It's going to be a great opportunity to interface with the community. And then it's a new organization. It's going to be 5 years old, so there's a real opportunity to develop it and evolve it in a really smart and methodical way. So external threats. Obviously, like I shared with you, we have an aging population, which drives up our service calls. The public perception of government, starting at the federal level and all the way down, we have to deal with that perception. Branding. When I talk about branding, I know I sound like a corporate guy, but when we became the Five Cities Fire Authority, I believe after 90 days that at some level, people forgot who their local fire department was. We weren't the Oceano Fire Department and the Grover Beach Fire Department and the Arroyo Grande Fire Department. My job is to re-engage the community, and at every chance I get, remind them that we're still the same folks with the same mission. And obviously competing priorities. You know, I've been... The Arroyo Grande City Council had their first budget workshop, and I know as we're coming out of the economic downturn, things are looking better, but the recovery is much slower than we'd like to see it in the public sector. So, again, we have needs, but I also understand there's competing priorities with other services. So let me give you a couple of examples. And again, this, let me stop before I go any further and say this is not to depress you. This is not to give you indigestion. This is just kind of observations to get things on the table to build awareness with you. If you do want to give me change, I'll gladly take it. So here's some of our fire engines. So these three that just turned yellow are either at 20 years or 15 years of service. Engines typically run 10 to 15 years in frontline status and then spend another 5 years in reserve and then they go away. So as you can see, we definitely have apparatus that are at that point. We're keeping them in service, but as you know, as your car gets older, your maintenance costs increase at some proportionate level. So I just also wanted to share a couple of slides, and I know these are long, but you have hard copies in public. There's some copies in the back of the room as well. I don't want you to think that I'm just making this up. So I asked a couple of retired former fire chiefs to share just a brief comment to help me frame this. And, you know, Terry Fiebig, who was the first fire chief when we put this together, basically said this was really put together to increase efficiency and service levels to our community, and the cost savings that we had, while we realized those early on, we knew that there were going to be continued operational cost needs. And the way to look at this is we're providing a great level of service together as the authority as opposed to trying to do the service level individually as our own fire department. Mike Hubert. There was Mike Hubert 1.0 and Mike Hubert 2.0 when he came back after retiring the first time. But he was there to put the JPA together, to put the finishing touches on it in 2010, made it happen with a lot of support from the community. So, again, very similar comments from Mike, and you can read those when you have some time. So, needs. This is what I shared with the fire board at our last meeting. They're not prioritized. They're just up here on a slide. We need a second battalion chief, and I'll talk more about that. We need engineers for the Oceana Fire Station. Current staffing levels at the Roy Grandy and Grover Beach Station are that you have career captains and career engineers and a reserve firefighter, so you have three folks consistently on staffing. In Oceana, we have a captain and a reserve firefighter, so we have two-person staffing. Fire engines, you saw the yellow picture. Formal dispatch agreement. As called out in the existing budget, there was a need to continue and formalize the dispatch agreement with Grover Beach. Excuse me. We need to address that in this budget cycle. So it's still a good deal, but Arroyo Grande and Oceana are going to be asked to formalize the agreement. SCBAs, Equipment Replacement Fund, I'll talk about that. SCBAs, Self-Contained Breathing Apparatus, and then a future need for firefighters. So why a battalion chief? This is a lot of words. Again, you have a hard copy, but we're looking for that additional full-time position for mid-management, duty coverage, and we really need to develop a prevention bureau. And a prevention bureau is obviously educating the public, doing disaster preparedness, getting the word out as an education basis, but it's truly looking at our multifamily dwellings and commercial buildings to make sure they're safe and up to fire code. That's really what a prevention bureau does. You know, when I try to put this together and share it with folks, if you look at the Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach Police Departments, there's a chief and then there's two commanders looking for a very similar structure. Not only to share duty coverage, but to, again, build that prevention bureau. And within that prevention bureau is an opportunity to increase revenues from inspections. It's not going to solve all world problems from the fire authority perspective, but it's definitely going to help sustain the organization. Importantly, it offloads program responsibilities. When we started, everyone lent a hand. We need to take some of those program responsibilities off the captains and engineers to allow them to focus on operational training. So a little more on the fire engines, the white one. I wasn't here. I lived in the community. But we bought two used fire engines from Sparks, Nevada. They were built in 1996. They're 20 years old. One of them is already surplused in the consolidation, but there's still one in service. Engine 3 was purchased new in 2004. The company name is American LaFrance, which is long established in the fire apparatus business. Unfortunately, the company is no longer in existence. The parts on this vehicle are proprietary in design, which means they're really hard to find, and when we find them, they're very expensive. We've spent $26,000 in service just on this rig in the last 2 years. Engine 4 looks familiar, I'm thinking, to you. That came to us from Legacy Oceano Fire when the JPA was formed, again, purchased in 1996. So, numbers. What does a fire engine cost? In ballpark numbers, about $500,000. Cheap. It's a little more expensive than a Yugo. But when we look at that, there's obviously ways to finance that purchase. This is just two examples in meeting with Pierce, which is an apparatus manufacturer and a subsidiary of Oshkosh. The cost of money is still favorable at 2.7%. A 7-year lease purchase program is an annual payment of $82,000. I know you're probably somewhat familiar with the truck, where we received a 75% grant, and then we had to split up the 25%, and that last payment is coming. So it's $82,000 a year, split up by the member communities, and in the 8th year, it's a dollar, and we own the apparatus. That last column, that is roughly $62,000 a year, is kind of like your traditional car lease, where we pay for the thing for 7 years, and then we turn it back in. I don't know how wise a decision is. We'd like to keep the apparatus. SCBAs, again, the breathing apparatus. It's about a $500,000 investment. The good news, and I'm knocking on this fake wood right here, is the Assistance for Firefighter Grant Program typically covers all but 10 to 20% of them match for that. It needs to be replaced in 2017. We're starting to work on the research to get that grant submitted. Engineers. I know we had talked about this, and we were going to submit a SAFER grant for consideration, and I assume that Vice President White briefed you on the decision that we made at the fire authority level, but it really boiled down to an ethical decision and what's right for the organization. We did not submit the grant. Doesn't mean the need for that additional body went away. Firefighters. We have a great reserve firefighter program. We love talking about the caliber of these reserves, but we pay them $10 to $12 an hour. The minimum wage goes to $10 in January of 16. So we're going to need to adjust that. But we're seeing that we're having more and more challenges recruiting these folks. When we're successful, we get people out of a fire academy. They're great. They're well-trained. They're motivated because they're learning valuable experience and receiving certifications from us in exchange for, which allows them to start testing and applying for career jobs throughout the state. So typically we'll keep the people for hopefully a year to two, but sometimes a lot less than that. So we're just thinking we can hold the program together for 3 to 5 years, but we're going to need to look at firefighters in the future. So this timeline, this is just a thinking, and it was just a point of discussion at the fire board, but where do we go and how do we start investing in this? And again, you have a hard copy of this. So some numbers. Battalion chief with salary and benefits at the high end of the scale is $186,000. I'm going with the big numbers to be conservative. Three engineers, $371,000 a year. You need one per shift. Fire engines, we talked about that. SCBAs, we spoke about that. A firefighter with a mid-range firefighter with a family of four, so I could go high and conservative on benefits, is roughly about $99,000 a year. So the wrap-up. Again, it's a great opportunity. We're a young organization. The people are motivated. They're committed to the organization. They want to do the right thing. The reality is our vehicles and equipment are aging and are going to need replacement. Staffing levels are constrained. We had a meeting today with interim city manager Bob McFall from Arroyo Grande, and I had this shift. So all three stations were in our conference room, and one of the guys looked at him and said, if there's a structure fire today, this is the Five Cities Fire Authority. So we're doing well with what we have, but you really have to realize that staffing levels will need to be addressed in the future as well. And technology, as you can imagine, is playing an increasing role in service delivery. So what's next? At the next fire board meeting, we're going to have a budget workshop. We're going to look at priorities. We're going to start going down the road of what is a specific revenue strategy, and then continue our community outreach, telling the story, reestablishing ourselves in some ways with our neighbors. So why am I here? It's really not to depress you. It's to put this on your radar screen. It's to build that awareness and be an open partner with you as you take care of your community. With that, if you have any questions, I'm done.
That was great. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
I do have one quick question. Go. I just wanted to clarify on the numbers. With the number of firefighters, you were looking at the 900,000 annually. You're looking at increasing by nine. Is that what that was?
Yeah. Okay. So you need, basically, for coverage at each station, you need three people. And that's what that number
three
was.
Three at each. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions. That was really great. I really do appreciate you coming in and doing that. And particularly, you know, giving us a little bit more perspective on what we're looking at in the future and how, as we all start moving in the direction of our budgets, keeping in mind that Oceano is part of this collaboration. And, of course, we have to bring it into the fold and, you know, take care of each other, because some of our organizations are on shoestring budgets and some of them have lots of money. You know, so
I don't know if any of them have lots of money.
Well, there's a few. But the point being is that we all work together on making it happen.
Exactly.
And we do have a lot of community pride on the fire authority. I know that in Oceano we do.
Thank you.
I agree with that sentiment as well.
All right. Have a great meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
All right. Let's do
we have a Jay Don.
What?
Mr. Wells. In place of Mr. Donovan.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay.
I see. We're all cheering tonight.
That's fantastic. Good evening, Madam President, directors. I'm Sergeant Jay Wells, one of the South Station sergeants, standing in for Commander Donovan, who's got another assignment tonight. We've got a lot of change going on at the Sheriff's Office right now. We recently had a chief deputy retire, and so they promoted one of our commanders to his position, and that's provided some promotion behind that. So we've got a lot of movement going on in our department right now. Mm-hmm. Speaking to Oceano, or the Oceano Substation, or the South Station, as we like to call it, in the last calendar month, we responded to 1,871 calls for service. 871, I like the round number too, but that's what the computer tells me, were strictly Oceano. So 871 calls for service in Oceano, staffed or handled by a building that houses 22 deputies. So that's pretty phenomenal that we're able to handle as much work as we actually do. Just a little bit of a summary. There were 11 drug arrests, drug-related arrests, 26 reports of theft, 10 assaults, investigations and or arrests, 10 warrant arrests, and then miscellaneous crimes filled in the rest. Just keep in mind, a lot of our responses don't necessarily generate a report or an arrest, but we track every call for service, including probation calls for service, public assist, which would be responding out to assist someone with, I don't want to say the cat in the tree, but you know, helping someone get into a locked house or something like that, where somebody's locked out of a car. We do all. We're a multifaceted agency. But that's pretty much the summary I have for you. Do you have any questions?
No, but I would like to thank you for coming. You, one of your gentlemen came to my door the other day because he was afraid that my Jeep had been broke into and somebody had forgot to shut the door. But he had been driving by and had seen it open for hours and hours and hours, and he took the time to knock on the door. So that's kind of service that we get from your department, so thank you very much.
That's one of the things we really pride ourselves on, is noticing things before they're noticed by other people.
Correct.
And I like that there's very few people that have that interaction, and they don't really realize that that's something that we do, but we have to knock on people's doors quite a bit to remind them to close their garage door, leave their valuables locked up in their vehicle. As far as theft goes, we're still having a problem with things being left in unlocked vehicles, things of value in plain sight, and that's what crooks are looking for. And they can just walk up and open your door and have access to everything you have.
Yeah, the main thing that I hear, you know, because people do pick up the phone and call us, is some of the transient populations moving through, and how, you know, one area will be pushing them in. Say our direction, say from the, you know, somebody will be pushing from the north and somebody will be pushing from the south, and they end up in an unincorporated area of the county, which happens to be, you know, our backyard, and it has just created a quality of life issue for a lot of people, particularly people who live along the creek.
Absolutely.
You know, so I know that you guys are chronically down there and constantly on it, and if there's anything we can do as a community to help, please let us know, because it's not just about the people on the creek. It's about everybody's quality of life.
Right. Definitely the homeless population is a contributing factor to a lot of our crime, but it's not the sole source of our crime.
No. No, I know who all my little neighbor kids are. So does anybody have any questions?
No. Thank you, Mr. Wells.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for taking your time. All right. Tony. Thank you, sir.
Good evening, Board. Tony Marchino. For the past 2 weeks, we've had 17 work orders, 8 USAs, 5 customer service calls, 1 call out due to a false alarm at 1655 Front Street.
Answering what street?
1655 Front Street, right here at this facility. The answering
really?
Service called the on-call operator due to a fire alarm that reset itself. We had 67 door hangers. We had 14 lock-offs from those door hangers. We had meter reads. After meter reads, we had high consumption, low consumption to verify. We had to notify customers that had leaks. We've been replacing meters that are either stuck or can't read. That's pretty much for the past 2 weeks.
I know you guys have been pretty busy out there, seeing you buzzing around.
There's always something to do.
And I'm glad to see that a lot of you are wearing sun hats to protect yourselves.
They do a good job with that, yes.
Yes, it's important. Does anybody have any questions?
The new trucks on the road?
New trucks on the road. We got the backhoe fixed. We got to backfill a few locations that were waiting on the backhoe to get fixed. We had line breaks, slurried some locations, repaved. Truck came in really handy. It more efficient, safer, moving the road plates. You know those are anywhere from 500 to 800 pounds, I'm guessing. I know they're not light.
You and Jason pick those up, right?
Absolutely not. So the truck came in really well, real handy. A lot of asphalt we had to move before we paved. Can't ask for a better truck. We pulled the jetter around. We've had to use that a little bit. It's working out perfectly.
And I saw the backhoe was back up and doing its thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Back up and running.
How much was that to fix? Do you remember?
Off the top of my head, I believe that would be about $1,200 to $1,800.
Great.
I'm trying to give you a good ballpark.
And do you have an expectation on the life expectancy of that backhoe?
Not long.
Cost of replacement? Or?
Honestly, I believe we've exceeded its life expectancy.
By a few years, if I'm not.
Yes, it's 1981.
Same age as the district, right?
Same year the district was formed, right. Yes. So it's, I believe it's past its life expectancy.
Okay.
So even though things are tight, we're still being able to get you the minimal equipment, but good equipment to continue your work.
Absolutely. And we have some good guys in the field that turn wrenches, keep it running.
Yeah, that's good. Multitasking.
Yes.
Carrie, you have anything you'd like
to
add? No. Oh, I just want, you said you had 67 door hangers and how many lockoffs? I didn't hear
14.
That. Thank you.
And that's just about normal for the door hangers, right?
I believe that was actually a little lower than usual. Correct?
The door hangers.
It was lower than usual.
Okay, good. Glad to hear that.
Yes.
Because it kind of gives you a sense of the economy and, you know.
Seems like everybody's doing
where the households are.
A little better.
Holding on, yeah, a little bit better. A lot of people are back to work. So. Anybody else have any comments? Lori, anything?
No, I think the backhoe's doing great because we used to have one and it didn't last that long. So, kudos for that.
Yeah.
Preventive maintenance takes care of a lot of issues.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
All right. Directors' reports and outside committees. Let's start with Mr. Guerrero.
All right. I appeared at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District last week. The citizens
brave man.
The citizens committee was formed to review the RFPs for the management review. I think the time period is 2006 through 2012. I could be wrong on that. I didn't have to go back and double check it. The time period, but we do have a member from Oceano. Otherwise, it's a 9-person board.
Now, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Can you slow down?
We do have a member on that board. It's 9 people were appointed. The original staff report was to do 3, but because of the interest,
I thought the original was 11.
I think there were recommendations here of groups of 3.
Right.
And so once we figured out and we had our criteria of who we thought was should be eligible or ineligible based upon past relationships with prior district administrator.
9.
So we ended up with 9 people.
And 1 rep for Oceano?
There's 1 rep from Oceano.
Well, that's a win because Oceano wasn't even going to be considered. So, great.
So there is 1 rep. The RFPs, I believe, are due in on, I forgot. Is it April 11th? That's the date that's sticking in my head. So they'll review those RFPs and make a recommendation for the board. If any come in, hopefully there are some, regarding the management review.
And that's best practices. What is the scope of that committee's work? Just a brief scope.
Well, the committee's going to review the RFPs. The RFPs were to review the past management practices for my take on it is that best practices to determine whether or not there's any lessons to be learned from the past. And one of the questions that I'll be asking them to look at is in 2013, when we replaced the administrator, we replaced the engineers. The chief plant operator, who was present at the time of that plant, resigned, and we have a new plant operator. There's of the 10 employees that are there now, 7 of them have come since then. So I will be asking the board to, if there are any recommendations that they would have, things that we should have done that we didn't do in 2013, henceforward, if it comes up. I know the review, the proposal is, like, I think, through 2012, early 2013s, but you know, if there's any suggestions, I'd be open to hearing what those were.
And so the advisory committee or the citizens advisory mm-hmm. committee, that's is it lifelong for the organization? Is it I'm not quite understanding the scope of work. Are they to look at the past practices and the current practices, or how far reaching is it?
The RFP is it's past practices. You know, there's not been a resolution that's been passed to establish this as a standing committee. And so could there be? I guess there could be. It hasn't been discussed to make it a standing committee that continues forward.
Okay. Well, maybe we should talk later, because I'm still not clear on what the – I understand reviewing the past, but I'm not sure I see the future. You know,
understood.
But I'm sure it's there.
And then I also attended the Finance Committee, but I'll leave that to the chair to report. That'd be Ms. Blackburn. Are you okay with that, Jen?
Sure.
Okay. And then the second item was we approved an adjustment for the salary for the chief plant operator, Mr. Clemens. So that was approved on Wednesday night as well.
He seems to be a really dedicated, intelligent guy, and I actually like it when you ask questions.
And he knows the answer?
He knows the answer, and he helps educate the public, you know.
He's competent in a way that is very refreshing, that probably hasn't existed at the sanitation plant. I mean, just there's the whole, it's not just John Clemens, but there's the whole group, the whole team, shall we put it, is just so much better than anything that's existed in the past to my institutional knowledge. So.
Right. You know, and with you asking questions, it actually kind of makes you think a little bit more instead of just the plan itself.
Yeah, so. It can't be ignored. We went from, you know, having deficits of upwards of $750,000 per year, and more importantly, or more striking or startling is that they were violating the discharge permits on a regular basis, and that's not happening any longer. We're not violating the discharge permits, and we've got a $1 million surplus, frankly. And it's not a surplus because it's going to go into capital improvement projects at later dates, but having a clean running plant that's running within budget and below budget is just, I really applaud staff for what they've done.
Right, great. Thank you. Jen, do you want to go next?
Sure. I did attend the finance meeting, as Director Guerrero mentioned. We discussed the audit, which is on our agenda, or the RFP for the audit, which is on our agenda for today. We did review the budget update, and we also talked about funding for Five Cities Fire, considering the option of OCSD working directly with Five Cities Fire to find grant funding utilizing our town's demographics for facilities, equipment, and generally to just assist with our obligations in that area. And our next meeting will be April 13th, which is a Monday.
Great. And hopefully our other partners in the Five Cities will also take it upon themselves to help us assist the Five Cities.
Did we set a time for that, Jennifer? I didn't put it in my calendar for the April 13th.
I don't know that we did decide on a time, actually.
Okay. To be announced.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Karen, do you have anything to report?
Yes.
Great.
Attended the Monday, March 23rd, just 2 days ago, Oceano Advisory Council meeting. It was a very, very busy meeting. Gennaro Diaz, and I think I'm killing his
Gennaro.
Gennaro Diaz, I'm sorry. County Public Works Project Manager has undertaken to redefine and work with the revitalization project on Front Street work, future work on Front Street. And he came with some very interesting conceptual charts on Front Street and 13th, Paso Robles, 15th, Oceano, and Beach and 17th. And I think the first two are just, he's looking at bump outs and ways to maybe realign the 13th Street and 15th Street intersections because of the perpendicular meeting of all those streets. We looked at a major possibility for Beach 17th and Railroad, which would involve kind of realigning Railroad to Beach and closing 17th at Beach, where the Little Triangle Park is, and closing that street. He's got three proposals, but we suggested that where Railroad and Beach could run almost, I mean, they could almost meet at the center at Front Street as being a really good idea. It will be continued next month on Oceano Advisory, and there were some other things he's trying to detail. For instance, what did we want for sidewalks? What did we want for street lighting, pedestrian amenities? I did open my mouth and tell him that, as far as I was concerned, I believe that Oceano wanted to preserve their historic concrete lights along Front Street. Mm-hmm. And he suggested that maybe there could be two different kinds of lights, the historic ones and then some ones that are designed mostly for just pedestrian, to light the path for the pedestrians as they walk along Front Street. So it's a work in progress. The other thing that we looked at was the potential for a fitness park to be located somewhere like a pocket park with fitness equipment for Oceano in conjunction with that comprehensive health study. One of the things that the comprehensive health study last year came out with is the fact that there needs to be more physical fitness opportunities for Oceano. And there's a great possibility that a pocket park could be developed. There's a lot of issues, but there's a lot of people working on it, including the county and some other groups. So those were the two major things. I should say that Captain Bueno, mm-hmm. from the California Highway Patrol, the commander, was here, and April is going to be Distracted Driver Awareness Month. And I am sure that as a part of Distracted Driver's Awareness, they're going to be looking at continuing use by people driving with their cell phones. So it's just next month, everybody wants to be really well-behaved.
After that, back to the old habits, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Can I just point out, with regards to those conceptual drawings for the different options for Front Street, those are on the Advisory Council website on the front page, so it's just oceanoadvisorycouncil.org, and you can find those there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's great.
Lori,
do you have anything to offer?
No, I don't.
Okay. I didn't attend any outside committees. I attended other functions, so
yes.
Wait.
I
attended the Boys and Girls Club fundraiser the other night. Take me out to the ballpark.
Ball game.
It was great. It was absolutely great. The one thing I realized is I have absolutely no ball shirts in my closet. So, gotta go shopping. But it was really well organized, and I know that Mario and Ellie from the Boys and Girls Club really did a bang up job, and I don't think anybody walked out of there not having a good time.
I really want to thank them, the Five Cities Boys and Girls Club, for having this facility in Oceano.
Yeah.
And there was a discussion, or discussion isn't the right word, but the one of the presenters mentioned that the Boys and Girls Club may move to the Oceano Community Center. And so obviously, personally, can't speak for the board, I thank you. And I support what you guys are doing. The executive director is here this evening, and so we thank her specifically. She was poached from Santa Maria, and thank you. Thank you so much.
It's really nice to see the organization really under new leadership and blooming and starting to show that potential. It's an amazing contribution to the community.
Very heartwarming.
Yeah, and I walked out of there really broke. So it was worth every penny.
She couldn't keep her hand down. She kept bidding.
I'm going to have to go to Auction Anonymous or something. Okay, so everybody did their committees and all their contributions. Okay, great. So let's move on to...
President Lucy.
Pardon me?
You forgot somebody.
On this meeting, I have an update because I did attend the Zone 3 Advisory Committee.
But you have to... Oh, you did put your name down, too. Shoot. Okay.
So,
let's talk about Zone 3.
There are two outside committees I attended. One was the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, and the second on Monday was the County's Disaster Preparedness Advisory Committee. The primary agenda item I want to address at the Zone 3 Advisory Committee was the declaration of surplus water. The calculations that were provided by the county were inconsistent with your board action in December. And as a result, I had discussion with county staff on that point. I voted no on the calculation. The second part of that motion was to implement consistent with the LRRP, the Low Reservoir Response Plan, so I voted yes on that. Initially, the committee was inclined to approve, staff recommendations, and I asked them to take them in order so that I could make sure to confirm that the calculations are inconsistent with your board's action in December, and yet, obviously, we're still supportive of the LRRP approach. At the county's Disaster Preparedness Advisory Committee, that is a consortium of a lot of the different emergency response agencies, the fire departments. Camp San Luis was there, the health agency was there, a lot of different response agencies, Red Cross, United Way, and they covered some of the current efforts on improving disaster preparedness regionally, as well as teams that would be essentially set up and to help address local emergencies. So, for example, if we had something specific in Oceano that developed, part of this operational plan is to make sure then that a team throughout the county could come and help respond to Oceano itself. So I'll continue to meet with that. Obviously, we have work here in Oceano in order to, beef up our emergency disaster plans. But in the meanwhile, maintaining good communications with the other agencies and the county's committee is what we can do to help make sure that we're ready to respond and coordinate with the others in the event that we are faced with an emergency or a disaster. So those were the two meetings I attended, and that's my update on both of those.
Well, I'm really glad that you're attending those because after 9/11 is when the country really started looking at emergency preparedness on a real level, when the floods happened in 2010, I saw at that point that we had a problem because half the directors were sending people here to evacuate, and the ones that had read the brochure were sending them to the high school. So I'm really happy to hear that you're going to that, and everybody should be on the same page.
And one of the things that Celia and Mario are doing is when we have new customers and new people who come into town for the first time, well, the water company is often the first entity that people show up at. So we have a lot of the counties, the disaster calendars that have a lot of good information in there. They have the collection points where the carless population can go. The idea is that if you're an immobile individual to make sure to get on the county's list, because then they'll come and, you know, find you in the case of a disaster. So we're handing those out, and we're asking people if they have any non-ambulatory or Colorado's populations when they sign up for water service as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Good.
Thank you. I have been discussing the needs, our local needs for disaster planning for a couple of years at least.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's unfortunately was one of the things that kept falling through the cracks. There wasn't a top priority at the time in the past, and it's on the agenda and it's being taken care of. So thank you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not on item 8.
Okay. So zone 3, everything's, they're starting to look at their annual budget, or is everybody complying with the LRRP? Did anybody report out, like, how many people, you know, made a difference in their drought programs? Because I know that we're right around 11%, right?
Correct. So I gave an update on what we are currently doing, but I was the only one who gave an update on our drought efforts. But granted, we know that the other agencies within Zone 3 are also taking similar actions, and some of them are having to take more significant actions than even Oceano.
Are any of them thinking about bringing on any new sources? Because I know we have neighbors who haven't brought on new water sources in 50 years.
And so that was not...
40 years?
That was not a topic on the agenda.
Well, they'd brag about it if it was.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Is there any indication when more draconian measures on water conservation are going to be coming down the pipeline?
So the State Water Board...
There's still a lot of very green lawns.
Yes.
Yes.
So the State Water Board did recently modify the regulations that they adopted in 2014. So I'll be bringing those back to your board very shortly. The governor's 20%, you know, goal obviously is something that we'll be addressing later during the Prop 218 update. But right now it really rests with each local agency to look at the water supply and then to make, you know, their multi-year drought planning efforts and to implement the conservation efforts that are appropriate for their agency. And again, as part of the Prop 218 process, that's where we are at Oceano right now.
Great.
Thank you.
And you'll keep us posted, because that's really one of
yes.
the more important, I always felt it was one of the more important bodies that we participate on, since we all need water.
Yes.
So, okay, moving right along. Celia, we're going to start the consent agenda. Is there anything you'd like to change on the consent agenda?
Yes. So I have a modified recommendation for the March 11th minutes to reflect that Ms. Tacker made public comment on the Five Cities Fire Authority report and items 10B and 10C. Plus, she handed out an email from Jeff Edwards, which I have provided to the board members and the public.
And you were given, and the email was given to legal counsel?
Yes.
Okay,
I put one there.
And you'll respond to the newest need?
I don't.
At this time, there's no response. It's simply modification of the minutes to reflect those items as...
I just didn't want it to fall through the cracks. Thank you.
I have a minor little note on that. Also, just under the Board of Directors and outside committees, this is President Lucy reported on. It just is missing the C on RAC. No. It is a very minor thing, but I just noticed on item 8.3.
Which do we know?
Item 8.3 of the March 11th minutes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes,
public comment.
On the consent agenda.
Consent agenda, items listed on the consent calendar for which is for matters considered. Routine.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to follow. My name is April McLaughlin, and I am a Five Cities resident. On the minutes, I would like to make some small corrections. It was Beatrice Spencer who spoke from Rio Grande. It was April McLaughlin of the Five Cities who spoke. And then under item 10B.
I'm sorry. Just to make sure that I understand, these are the minutes of March 11th that you're speaking to?
Yes, sir.
And it was agenda item number?
In the box of 9 under consent, just after that, between the two boxes, between 9 and 10A.
I see you.
So I'm not sure what the boxes mean, but I'm in there somewhere.
Understood. Now, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then under 10B, that really should reflect under the action column, after discussion and no public comment, staff's recommendations, because really there was no public comment to that. Julie Tacker was the only one who spoke to that. I restate that. Julie Tacker was the only one who spoke to that before an action was taken, and then public comment was opened back up after public action was taken.
Was it opened back up, or was it opened up for discussion and to hear from the public, and then the vote was taken?
President Lucy, as is normally with your board meetings on the discussion items, you take public comment before any of the discussion items.
Correct.
And that was the opportunity that was presented, and some individuals did speak at that point in time.
Can my time stop while you guys discuss that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. So public comment was received on all the discussion items prior to the discussion items, and so public comment was the opportunity that did exist and was provided.
Okay. I thought so, because...
But then it was opened back up.
Okay. When you're ready, we'll start the clock again.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to discuss quickly the Matt's report regarding the Oceano Community Services District, the South Sanitation District, that meeting that just happened. Matt just reported that we went from a deficit of $750,000.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. President Lucy, this is just for limited to discussions on the consent agenda. You'll have the opportunity for public comment to talk about Director Guerrero's report at the time we take comment on business items.
Okay. So, thank you. Again, it's really confusing to follow. Thank you.
Well, at any time you need help, we'll be happy to help you. Ms. Tacker?
Julie Tacker. And, yes, that item 10B was opened back up, and that's when Linda Austin came up and spoke. It was well after you'd already considered other items. So if the minutes should reflect the meeting as it transpired in sequence. She came back to the podium an hour or so later to talk about that item. What I see is happening is when Mr. Curtis was here, he developed these boxes. And they're not in the right place. They're the box before number 9 is... The box after 9 is before anybody makes any corrections. So the public is forced to go before the corrections. Maybe they wouldn't come up at all if they could hear all the corrections. This time it actually happened. But the box after 10 tells you that you can talk to the items that were number 8. So I encourage you to go back and look at agendas, how they were done prior to at least Mr. Curtis, but maybe go back as far as before Molly Thurmond and the change in your agenda formatting. I'll be back for other comments.
And later. Just so you know, Ms. Tacker, yes, we are definitely looking at the formatting of the agenda, because some of the public comment is, like you said, in boxes, and some is not.
Yeah.
You know, and so some are directions on, you know, like ADA compliance and stuff. So, yes, you know, we have some formatting issues to do there. Thank you.
I appreciate that. But I think that's what leads to disenfranchising.
Then it would be so confusing for some.
It's confusing for, I think, even you, ma'am.
Oh, I admit it is.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have any other comment on consent agenda items? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda with the changes that Celia has outlined and any typos or...
I so move. Let's get past this.
Do I hear a second?
No, a second.
Okay. Do you want to do a roll call, Celia?
Sure. Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. Okay. Moving right along. 10A.
Public comment.
Business items. Public comment. Does anybody have anything to put on for business items? Special presentations, reports, boards of directors, outside committees. Did we just do that?
No, as a point of clarification, certainly at this point in time, it's appropriate to have public comment on presentations and reports of the board director outside committees. With respect to items 10A, B, C, D, and E, the question for tonight is whether there's going to be separate public comment on those different items. And as a quick summary on items B, that's the one item where I wouldn't anticipate any staff discussion on that, but there might be board discussion. So considering the nature of the agenda tonight, you might want to take public comment on each of the business items. And if that's the case, then at this time it would only be a public comment on special presentations, reports, and board of directors and outside committees.
I'm fine with that. I just don't want to lose, cut 10E short at all. That's the only thing I'm mainly... all of them are of utmost importance, but I don't want people to feel like, you know...
Yeah.
They can't comment before the discussions or after. So how about if we do...
So at this time, then, it would be public comment on the special presentations, reports, and board of directors and outside committees.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I think Ms. McLaughlin has already used her 6 minutes.
No, yes. She hasn't.
Wow, Matt, thanks.
You're welcome.
So why did we consider you so friendly? Time starts now. I would like to speak to the report that Matt provided regarding the SAM district.
Director Rowe, this
sir.
Okay.
Yes. The first thing I wanted to point out is that Matt gave a report and he stated that there was a $750,000 deficit that the SAM district was running on, and that now there's roughly $1 million surplus. That's exactly why there is a committee oversight committee working on getting investigation to see what was going on behind the scenes. I'm so happy to see that the district is moving forward and making great progress and great strides, but we have to figure out what happened and what went wrong in the past, and that's why we have this oversight committee. It's a shame that Oceano is underrepresented there. If they would go to the meetings and they would participate, they would have representation. Only Oceano can make that happen. Roy Grandy's doing it and Grover's doing it. It's a shame that Oceano is not. The other thing that Matt did not report under his, I guess, not sanitized report is that there have been racist emails being sent to the staff at the sanitation district. Luckily, Mayor Hill has obtained them, and he has turned them into the police department and various agencies that need to know about that. President Lucy here, which is an alternate over at the SAN district, came to the podium and spoke and stated, Mary Lucy, President, Oceano Community Services District, an alternate to the sanitation something. I couldn't understand her. She talked about the Brown Act, and in the end, she stated that none of you have the right, and she's talking to the board, none of you have the right to determine what is important in my life, what validates me, what allows me to handle my personal business, nor does anybody in the public. I, too, am a ratepayer. You, too, are ratepayers. We are all volunteers. You're an elected representative of Oceano. You are not a volunteer.
you're not doing the district favors by thinking of yourself as a volunteer. Please represent the district. You're one of three. You are just one of three, but you're all of Oceano. Thank you.
Yeah. And I just have to say that, you know what, I'm really very honored to be a volunteer for 35 years of my life to nonprofits and other entities, and I'll never apologize for being a volunteer. So, Julie Tacker.
Really quick, I wanted to clear up a little bit of the confusion about the citizen committee.
Okay.
They're overseeing the request for proposals for a consultant to come in and look at years 2004 through 2012. And that's, they're just looking at the proposals. The job will be done by the consultant. And just so we're on the same page, the duration of the committee is about a month, maybe 2 weeks, because then they got to award the RFP.
Okay, so it is to do a review. That's really what I wanted to know, the scope of work.
The consultant does the review, but the committee is just...
No, the consultant submits for a proposal.
Right.
Is your body the one reviewing, well, the body that was picked, reviewing the submitted proposals for the project?
The project is the review of the 12 years.
People who submit a proposal to do
that's
job,
the consultant.
Who selects them? The committee?
The committee's going to make a recommendation to the board.
Great.
And the board makes the choice.
So, okay.
Yeah. Just
I needed to hear that.
Yeah, and I thought the more you talked about it, the more confusing it got out here.
So yeah, I just needed to know what the scope of work is.
Well,
for
you
the
can
committee.
Look at the RFP. Yeah, the committee is just to look at the RFPs.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Any other public comment? No? Hearing none? We're going to move this right along. Okay. First, 10A. Can I ask Mr. Ogren to take us to this? And it's... Boy, I'm really behind here. 7:45. Okay. Can I ask that at like, right around... Before we start 10E, that we take a break. Please.
Certainly, or maybe even after these next three items might be relatively quicker with D and E taking longer. So let's see how the time goes, but maybe after 10C, then we take a break.
Okay, great.
So on 10A, this was a request by Greg Petko to appeal a denial of a water bill credit for a leaky toilet that exists on a piece of commercial property. But I'm not sure that Mr. Petko is still here because my basic assessment underneath the ordinance, the district's ordinance, is that I have to be able to make one of three different findings, but the one that I could not make is that the leak was non-detectable because leaky toilets make noises.
Right.
And so, and also the significance of the leak would indicate that it was maybe upwards of about a half a gallon per minute. So the toilet was really leaking a lot. And so I could not make that finding that it was non-detectable. And I had to then, pursuant to the ordinance, deny the request for a water bill credit. Mr. Petko then chose to appeal it to your board. So this would be the time that Mr. Petko would present evidence or other statements to your board requesting to overturn my denial and have it approved by your board. But again, I don't see Mr. Petko here.
Can we? Well, we got a couple of options. One is we could hear the appeal, there being nothing presented, or we could table it if he wanted to resubmit it.
Can I offer a suggestion?
Yes, please.
That staff move forward with staff recommendations, and if Mr. Petko wants to continue to pursue it, then he can submit a letter or attend a meeting, but I think staff should continue to move forward.
Well, okay, so at this point in time, the issue of the appeal is in your board's hands. Lacking the appealant being here and presenting reasons for to overturn it, especially since he was here earlier, then the question really comes is what's the basis to grant his appeal if he's not presenting? Now, you do have some written evidence and some documents from him, but at this point in time, my recommendation would be to deny the appeal, and then that exhausts his administrative remedies.
Is that fair? I mean, there may have been a reason why he couldn't stay if he was here for a while. And is there anything pressing? Can't this be continued for two weeks?
It's certainly within your board's discretion.
Because if he was here for a little while, I mean, it's not like he, you know, maybe he thought it would go quicker and he had other commitments.
I know.
Are we being fair to him?
I think, well, in my opinion, I think we're being fair, but I think that all the documentation and the fact that you'd have to lose over a half a gallon a minute kind of defeats the argument of a leaky toilet. You know, I mean, if my toilet did that, I mean, I'd know it, and, you know, probably most people would too. So I don't know, but I don't want to undermine staff recommendations.
And so, again, the standard under the ordinance is that it's supposed to be a non-detectable leak, and I just simply couldn't make that finding.
What would you like to do?
I think we just tabled. If he wants to bring it back, he can let Mr. Ogren know before the next meeting time to post the agenda. Because there may have been something. He may have gotten an emergency call or something. I mean, Even though it doesn't look like a terrific claim on its face, I'd like to give him this opportunity to be heard.
Okay.
So I would support that.
Tell him the next meeting.
Okay, so I guess my preference then would be to have it as a motion to continue this to the next regular meeting of April 11th, and then to have your board, after taking public comment, that would be my revised recommendation as a formal action, considering it's an appeal, and I think that makes it a quasi-judicial action and everything. Mm-hmm. Informal staff direction would probably be lacking, and some formal staff direction on the continuance would be appropriate after an opportunity for public comment.
All right.
Would you want public comment first?
Yeah, now would be appropriate.
Anybody who wants to comment on the RFP for the auditors?
No. On the Petco appeal.
Oh, still on this?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Ogren is suggesting after public comment if the board wants to make a motion to continue this till next meeting.
I am willing to make that motion.
But you've got to do public comment first.
Yeah.
Is there any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I'll entertain that.
I would like to move that we continue or table until the next regularly scheduled meeting. 10A, which is an appeal by Greg Petko on a denial of a water bill credit for a leaky toilet.
I'll second.
Okay. Can we just do a all? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Me.
Lori? Any abstentions? Hearing none. Four. Four. One. Opposed? Okay, moving right along. Lori.
I did.
10B, recommendation to approve a request for RFPs for an audit services. This is for our annual audit. Some people say best practices are to change auditors 3 to 5 years. Some say, you know, once you get an auditor, you should stick with them. So this is a question before the board as to whether we want to do an RFP for an auditor or if we should continue with the auditing services that we've used for 2 years now. I mean, they did the delinquent audits.
Yeah, they did the three-year catch-up and then either 1 or 2 years after that as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So does anybody have any comments? Do they want to do an RFP, or do you want to
That was the recommendation from Finance Committee, was to send out an RFP.
I would support the Finance Committee's recommendation.
Did you decide why you wanted to send it out?
Just best practice of rotating. And I think, aren't we required to? Are we required to, Jeff? I can't remember. But it's best practices. They get a different, their focus on, of course, the different auditors can be different and you get different focus. So,
a new set of eyes.
Staff, do you have some comments on this?
Certainly, I prepared this agenda item based on prior board direction in the fall. Because at that point in time, when your board awarded the one-year contract to Caliber, you also took a motion and directed me to prepare the RFP. So, as a good public servant, I follow my board's the board's direction. In terms of, you know, an opening on a discussion on my observations and everything, as I think was pointed out by your board members, that, you know, there are some theories of maintaining consistency, and there's other theories associated with making sure to rotate auditors for a new, fresh set of eyes. And both of them have a validity to them. Where we were at in the audit this year for last fiscal year is that after, you know, I started just after the year end, and there was about 4 months where the district did not have an accountant. And so I had a significant amount of work in order to get the books and records in sufficient shape to be audited. And even at that, the auditor has had to do a lot of work this year. So I want to make sure to express my appreciation for them. We have, during the course of the audit also, and I have identified a number of things that I think continue to need to be worked on. Now, regardless of whether it's the existing auditor or a new auditor, certainly they're all qualified to be able to work on some of the efforts that we need to do moving forward. And I think the issue of the RFP is simply that, knowing that we're in this state of transition, is there a benefit to keeping with the people who we've been working with prior to making that change? Because we are in a transition period and we do have a number of things that still need to be worked on. What is one example? One example is how we are accounting for the sheriff's building. That currently is being accounted for in the water fund and the sewer fund, because those were the original sources of the money that was used to construct it. And so one of the issues, the reporting issues that I have put on the table in discussions with the auditor is that an appropriate method of accounting or reporting, because the sheriff's station certainly is not an integral asset to our water operations, nor is it an integral asset to our sewer operations. And instead, the question is, should there have been, you know, the inter-fund loans and payables and amortization schedules set up? That is also then coupled with, because the idea is the governmental fund that would be then the owner of the sheriff's building owes money to the water fund and it owes money to the sewer fund. Likewise, we know that the water fund owes money to the sewer fund. I mean, water fund owes money to the governmental fund. So we have these interfund loans that are due and payable, and some of it's going to require some significant work to go back in time. And so, again, I think that any CPA firm that's qualified, you know, the CPA firm can work on those audits, can work on those issues as we move forward. The question is that there would be some benefit of continuing the existing relationship with the auditors who have their arms around those particular details so that we can get them resolved in the next year. And that's my best description of how your board might weigh the advantages or the disadvantages of one approach versus the other.
Lori, do you have anything you'd like to add to this?
I would kind of like to maybe keep Calibert for another year until we get all these things lined out better, because I know it's been hectic and crazy for the last couple of years with the changing of managers and that type of thing.
And accounting system.
Yeah, the whole system's been kind of in a mess. And since they've been working on it this last year, trying to get everything up to speed where it should be, I'd like to see another year continued so we have more of a structure where we get someone else and they may want to change stuff again. At least this way we'll see consistency.
Okay. Jen, is there anything you'd like to
contribute?
Well, I can definitely see the benefit of going both ways, either decision. So,
Karen?
Yeah, I'm with her. My only question, if we're calling for an RFP, can the accounting firm that we're hiring now come back and offer us? I mean, are we excluding them from?
No, they would not be excluded.
No.
It may be that the most economical way may be to stay with the status quo where we're at. Gary Jensen has been a pleasure to work with. Mm-hmm. There's been no failure on behalf of the auditor, which is nice. And they've been, through some of our turbulent times, Gary's been very helpful to me. Personally, we've spent quite a few hours on the phone over the years. And so this was what was brought back just as a matter of course. I think we thought in the finance committee that it would probably be best practice to pursue another auditor. But I think that neither Ms. Blackburn nor I are married to any of these particular suggestions. And if the board wants to stay, you're not going to get any objection from me. And if the board wants to put on an RFP, you're not going to get any. I would support that as well. So,
it might be appropriate then to take public comment at this time, get input from the public, and then wrap up your board discussion after public comment.
Yeah, and I think that's fine, but I have something to say too, Of course. I actually would like to stay with them. I understand the fresh eyes. I'm all for fresh eyes, right? But having you work with our auditor, this being the first year doing the annual audit together, mm-hmm. would kind of add as that fresh sense of eyes, because you're familiar and he's familiar, but you're not familiar on working together. Also, too, is that every time you go out to RFP, it doesn't come without cost. And it costs to run an RFP and to set it up. And then also, too, is just real quickly, is that the auditor that we're dealing with has an organizational history. And so when you pick a new auditor, they have to spend a lot of time, and they have quite a bit of a learning curve, mm-hmm. where if we stick with this firm one more year, I think we'll just tighten it better. And he also knows which direction the board wants to go. He understands that reserves are very important to us, and I think that we're so close to being able to go in that direction. So I would be in favor of staying with the auditor we have for another year. And on that note, I'll turn it over to the public.
Julie
Ms. Tacker.
Going out for an RFP can also save you money. And I think that's what you need to be looking for. And if Caliber can, because of their experience and because of their expertise and their history now with the district, they could actually provide a lower cost bid and compete against others. If you don't open it up to competition, they're a shoe-in. And as I recall, they charged, their contract was $17,000 or $19,000. By comparison, the sanitation district paid $6,000 for their audit this year. Los Osos paid under $9,000 for their audit. I really think you owe it to the ratepayers to open it up and get some competitive proposals for your consideration. And if Caliber comes out on top, so be it.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Anybody else have anything they'd like to comment on this? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we continue one more year with Caliber for our annual audit.
Any seconds? I'll second. Okay.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
No.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Okay. Are you okay, Jen? Okay, so it's
It's 804.
410. Okay. And now we're going to move on to, are we going to do a break right now? Or are we
let's do 10C. I was hoping to do 10C and then break.
Right. No, we just did.
Do we have any?
Oh, no, 10C, that's right. I'm sorry.
Fireworks.
Okay.
So, President Lucy, on a quick staff discussion on this is that the staff report itself, the recommendation is pretty simple, which is to open up the application period for safe and sane, fireworks, and to set the application deadline as April 30th. After receiving applications and coordinating with Five Cities Fire Authority, then we would come back to your board in May so that your board can make final decisions on who will get to be able to have the firework booths. So the basic recommendation of April 30th as the deadline for anybody, any person who's interested, is a pretty straightforward one. In the staff report, though, I do make mention of one thing that's relatively important that I believe your board should discuss, and that is because underlying resolutions and everything that have been previously adopted by your board gives preference to those who operated the fireworks booths in the prior years, provided that they did so in a compliant manner. Last year, Boys and Girls Club obtained a permit. However, it was turned over to Arroyo Grande High School Band. And so the question there is, do they still have that similar standing as they had in prior years? And so the executive director of Boys and Girls Club is here as well. But the basic application, so the recommendation for April 30th to be the end of the application period is the recommendation. And whether or not your board wants to discuss what happened last year with the Boys and Girls Club tonight, or whether the Boys and Girls Club submits an application and then you weigh that in final decisions in May when you award the permits, that's really the discretion of your board. But I wanted to make sure to note that one anomaly and, make sure to have an opportunity for the Boys and Girls Club to speak to what happened last year and to make sure that that's part of the discussions. But those were my brief verbal comments on this particular item.
I have one question. My memory may be failing, but I thought there was a limit to the number of...
There is.
Yeah, and it's moved around over time, and so right now I believe the limit is five.
Yes.
Okay.
3 to 5.
Yeah, so we have 4 that were issued last year. The current calls for a 5. It's been as high as 8 in the prior years.
Right. They said that didn't work because there was too much competition.
So, again, that is under current resolutions. This is the type of item, though, that your board has great discretion on providing direction tonight. So the application period through April 30th is pretty straightforward, and then any other direction that you might want to provide on this item would be appropriate.
Well, just a couple points is that I would actually stamp on this. This is not transferable, and that might help people in the future, if they're approached by another group to say, hey, you're not using yours, why don't you kick it over here? But one of the main criteria for this is that you had to provide services to the Oceana area 100%. Not just, a few kids are in our program or a few kids. No, they have to be, it has to benefit the community. And there are only a few organizations that truly do, solely do Oceano. I mean, it's not that they solely have to do Oceano, but this program, these funds have to be used for whatever function it is. So what do you want?
Well, so board discussion, public comment. I definitely think that the opportunity for Boys and Girls Club to come and discuss would be appropriate.
Okay. I would like them to have the opportunity myself.
Yes.
They're so integral. They're so great in our community.
And I will point out that it is not on the board's agenda tonight to determine whether or not you're going to give preference to the Boys and Girls Club. The agenda item's limited to the setting of the date of April 30th, so I think this is
right.
Just
well, let's set it for April 30th.
For information.
So the action item, so you can move forward no matter what.
That's right. Again, the application period through April 30th, but if your board's going to provide any special direction for me to follow up and bring back to your board at a subsequent meeting, when you go to actually award them in May, that's what I would like to have some direction on today so I can prep for the May meeting if needed.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything they want to add, contribute?
I have a couple comments. I know for years we did a fireworks stand for the fire department, for Five Cities Youth Football, a variety of different groups, and it is labor-intensive. You start off with really good planning, and for somehow, most of the people that say they're going to volunteer don't. They don't show up. So it comes down to a lot of times is you either have the people that are dedicated to it to do it themselves and run the whole thing for the week or more, or you don't do it because it's very labor intensive, and now you really don't make that much more money on it than you do if you have as many concessions. I would like to see it at four, but you know, five is go with five, I guess, because it's really tough. Been there and done it.
And the only I'm you can move forward with your staff recommendations, but truly I would stamp on there non-transferable.
Yeah,
and I believe that is incorporated in the ordinances. But again, at this point in time, last year, when that was occurring, the district did not have a general manager. And I think staff was simply trying to be as responsive to people who are coming through the door as they could be. So I agree that it is non-transferable, and the district allowed it to be transferred, but really it was for the lack of, you know, guidance from a general manager because there was not one at that point in time.
Okay. So how about we do this? We hear from the one nonprofit that's here tonight, the Boys and Girls Club, and then open it up for public comment. Sure. But do you want our commitment of to release the...
No.
No, just public comment and Boys and Girls Club, and then once public comment is over, then final board discussion and any direction that you provide.
So you want me to do public comment before...
It would be appropriate at this time, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So then we're going to go with public comment first and then hearing from the Boys and Girls Club.
Well, for points of clarification, hearing from the Boys and Girls Club is really part of public comment.
Come here, go away. Come here, go away.
Good evening.
That's our physical fit.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Allie Bailey. I'm the executive director for the Boys and Girls Club of South San Luis Obispo at the Oceano Clubhouse here in Oceano. I joined the organization at the end of July of last year, so actually after the fireworks. To the best of my understanding, our organization had been without an executive director for close to about a year. We were down to about three board members at the time, just keeping the doors open. We were not going to do a fireworks stand last year. So the fireworks company knew of that. They knew of other organizations that wanted that opportunity. Not quite sure who made the decision, but I can truly say it was just for lack of understanding the procedures that the permit retained. As a nonprofit in this community directly serving boys and girls here in Oceana between the ages of 5 and 18, in order to keep our membership, which is based on the Lucia Marsh School District, at only $50 a year, we really rely on opportunities like a fundraising booth for fireworks. As you indicated earlier tonight, we did have our annual fundraiser. But in order to really keep those costs low, our membership revenues, we do not pass that on to the families. It's about 9% of our entire budget. So as grants continue to wane, fundraising opportunities like a fireworks booth are very important to our agency. I'll just say that I've been there with the organization now 8 months. We've been bringing the club complete 360. Our board now is 11 board members strong, and things are really moving in a positive direction. We just recently got word that we will be getting the Bright Futures grant that we had lost 2 years ago in the fall, so we'll be conducting those two programs here at Oceano and in Grover Heights. So things are only moving up for us, and we would really like to be able to retain this opportunity to maintain our permit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other public comment?
Is there any other public comment? Yes, sir.
My name is John Carter. I'm an Oceano resident, and I'm also a member of the Elks Committee, or the Elks. And within the Elks, there's the Veterans Committee. And as part of the Veterans Committee, we're considering completing an application for a fireworks stand as well. Now, if I'm going to ask some questions that are, and that information is going to be embedded in the application, just let me know, and I won't ask so many questions. But I just want to make sure there's a process there, that if we apply, there will be some selection criteria, and then there will be a notification sometime in early May. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
Just know that you can call at any time and have your questions answered. And if it's not clear, then say I'm still not clear. So, you know, we're not going to...
So, yeah, I don't want to...
We're not going to turn a blind eye after you get your application.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Thanks for applying. You guys have a great steak dinner Friday nights.
Shirley Gibson, Howson, I just encourage you to keep it local.
Thank you very much. Okay. Is there any more public comment on this agenda item? Hearing none. Motion to approve release of the applications.
The recommendation is to set April 30th, 2015 as the application deadline for fireworks permits.
I'll move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Hearing all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? None? Break time.
All right.
Okay, it is 8:17. How about if we're back here by 8:25? Does that work?
It works.
Yeah. Everybody hear us in TV land? Well, if I know. Okay, that's okay, we're back on. Okay, so what we're gonna do is, why don't you just explain that, how you just explained that.
So Madam President, my thought in having this update on the Brown Act is simply a refresher course for your board. Last year, council provided a presentation, and considering the hour today, we can defer the presentation until a subsequent meeting, but it would be appropriate to take public comment on this agenda item prior to deferring it.
Take public comment on the Brown.
And if anyone has a comment on deferring it to next.
Okay. So we're going to open up the floor to public comment. If there's anybody who would like to speak to the issue of the Brown Act training that we periodically continually do to make sure that we're doing it right. And then we're going to defer this and jump to the next topic. But if anybody has anything they'd like to comment on the Brown Act training or refresher course, now's the time to do it. Hearing none. then we're going to table the Brown Act update and go on to item number 10E.
I'm up.
You're up.
Thank you, President Lucy. So our final discussion item tonight, this evening, is an update on the Prop 218 water system rate increase that is in process. There are three basic reasons why I wanted to make sure that this update is provided tonight. There is also one more regular meeting on April 8th prior to the special public hearing on April 20th. So on April 8th, I would also anticipate providing another update, especially because we had a couple of questions earlier in public comment today, questions regarding the status of the reserves and what has happened over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. There was some assertions that there's been no maintenance of the water lines for 60 years, so I want to make sure to address some of those questions. And today, then, I'm going to proceed. So, but three basic reasons, though. One is it's extremely important to provide this update to be responsive to the community questions and statements that have been coming up. As part of the presentation, I'm going to cover the steps that we've completed so far and the steps that are ahead of us, and being responsive to residents and property owners with information on the district and community needs is one way that we can help to build better communities here in Oceano. In addition, in these processes, sometimes there's misinformation that's out there, and not necessarily for bad reasons or anything, but there's a lot of information, and sometimes there's misinformation that can help to be cleared up during these types of updates. But basically, making sure that questions are being answered and that we're responding to residents and property owners. The second reason why I think it's important for an update tonight is that we are in a significant drought. Although Oceano has a better water supply portfolio than many other agencies because we have three sources, groundwater, Lopez water, and state water, well, even though we are in a better position, we are still in a significant drought. All of our supplies are facing cutbacks. The governor has called for a 20% conservation, and we need to be realistic that we are in a drought. As a natural disaster, droughts are unique. Hurricanes can come up pretty quickly. Earthquakes are instantaneous. But droughts occur over a longer period of time and can sneak up on you. NASA recently stated that California only has 1 year of water left. And certainly Oceano has more than that. But as we know, if our neighbors are drying up, and they will be looking, and we can't forget that. You know, this is not just Oceano, but we have a larger community around us, and everybody's in a significant drought. The third reason why I think it's appropriate is that the current water budget was adopted with about a $250,000 deficit, and that budget does not meet all of the needs of the district. It's not just to make up a budget deficit, and I think that's very important, but the water rate system rate analysis has the cost information in it that identifies what the district's needs are, and the revenue shortfalls because of consumption and conservation have naturally dropped off. So at this point in time, it's very important because while facing a drought, we don't want to be facing the double jeopardy of not having water and not having money. So three important reasons to make sure that we have updates. And with that, then, I'll move into some of the slides. As I mentioned at the beginning, I want to cover some of the steps that your board has taken. Even before January 14, of course, we entered into the year and your board adopted a water fund budget. That water fund budget was adopted prior. The preliminary budget was adopted prior to my arrival, and then the final budget was adopted shortly after my arrival. And that water fund budget did have some cuts from the prior year. I'm sorry, Director Blackburn, I do have copies to hand out to board members. And then more recently, on January 14th, your board adopted the 2015 strategic goals. And I think that's important because those strategic goals identify the drought-related issues that we need to be working through, and they identify the more immediate needs of the district. They also identify some of the longer-term issues that we need to be addressing, including our pro forma on our maintenance and some of the other infrastructure issues. But it was that January 14, 2015, strategic goal-setting process that launched us off into the steps that we lead to where we're at today. So then on February 9th, the Finance Committee had a meeting, and it was specifically the agenda item was on the drought rate analysis. On February 11th then, at a regular board meeting, you had a study session, and that was entitled Fiscal Impact Resulting from Drought, Water Conservation, and Other Factors, and Consideration of Policy Direction to Staff on Possible Rate Modifications and or Increases in accordance with Prop 218. So that was the study session on February 11th that your board had. And you provided direction, and with that direction then, on March 2nd, the Finance Committee met to review alternative rates structures and the development of a recommendation to the Board of Directors. And on March 2nd, your Finance Committee did act accordingly, which then brought us then to March 4th, which was your Board of Directors special meeting. And that was the introduction of the ordinance increasing and adjusting the water system service charges and setting the date for a public hearing on April 20th, 2015. The subsequent date, staff mailed out the legal notices to the residents and property owners. And there was two. One is to all of those who are customarily sent water bills in compliance with Prop 218. So in Oceano here, we send... the property owner is responsible for the bill, but in some cases we send them both to the tenant and to the property owner. And so what Prop 218 requires is whoever we customarily send the water bills to is what we need to do in accordance with Prop 218, and we did that on March 5th. In addition, we also sent notices to all the property owners as the county assessor has them listed on the last equalized assessment roll. And that second noticing provision is not a requirement of Proposition 218, but it is required for the district to preserve the right to collect delinquencies on property tax bills. So we made sure we had two different databases that we were working on. One was from our utility billing system and those who we customarily send bills to under Prop 218, and the second, the list was obtained from the county's assessor's office. Those notices include four required elements, and I'll just run through them real quickly. One is the amount of the rates and charges proposed in the water rate increase. Second is the basis upon which the proposed rates are calculated. Third is the reasons for the proposed rate increase. And fourth is the date, time, and location of a public hearing on the proposed rate increase, which is the time that written protests would need to be received by the district in order to conduct the count of whether or not there's sufficient protest to prevent your board from adopting the ordinance. Now, with respect to all of those meetings that I mentioned, we have a lot of information on the Oceano CSD website, oceanocsd.org. It's underneath the folder that's drought and other emergencies. Included in there is the water system rate analysis and some of the other information that has been on the agendas previously and some other links. What's next steps or remaining steps? On April 11th, 2015, we have an open house scheduled at the Oceano Depot on Saturday from 10 to 3, and that then will provide the opportunity, again, for individuals and residents and property owners in the community to come and ask questions about the water system and the rate analysis. We've also reached out to some of our other local agencies, Five Cities Fire Authority, the Sanitation District, South County Sanitary, which is our private waste collection company. And the timing on that is especially good because April 20th is the cleanup week. And so the sanitary company, the South County Sanitary, has indicated that they'll have some people here to provide people, those who show up, with information about cleanup week. AmeriCorps has been invited because they're doing some of the energy efficiency evaluations in the community. And so those are some of the invitees. Whether the County of San Luis Obispo might also, on some of the solid waste recycling efforts, is yet to be seen. But it should be a good turnout of a number of the different agencies that are serving the community and provide residents and property owners to ask questions amongst all of them. On April 20th, then, 6:30 in the evening, right here at the OCSD board meeting, will be the Prop 218 public hearing to consider protests and adoption of the rate increase. If that is adopted then on April 20th, then it will be effective on May 20th. Ordinances essentially take 30 days to become effective. And then that timing would mean that it's the May through July 2015 billing period, which would be the first billing period with the new rates in effect. And that's billed in late July, and those bills would be due in August. So in order to provide the timing for everybody in terms of how this process is going to continue, those are the summary points on next steps. Moving then into the Proposition 218 status and update and questions and answers, I listed a number of questions in the staff report. I've gotten a couple subsequent to that. And what I thought I would do is break them out into three different categories. One is fiscal questions, the second is technical questions, and then there's other questions and statements that are certainly very germane to the discussion of the status of Oceano's water fund. So out of the staff report, most of these are identified. The fiscal questions being, can the budget be cut to avoid the rate increase? Is the water fund budget going to be balanced? And how long will the district's financial reserves last if the budget is not balanced? Some of the technical questions then, and I'll be running through each of these individually in a moment here. Technical questions, can the rate increase be deferred until long-term infrastructure improvements can be included? Another one is, how does the district's tiered rate structure compare to San Juan Capistrano? And we're going to spend a little bit, it looked like I had an R there, but it's a little funny-looking question mark there, but Capistrano. And that one's particularly an important technical question, because even though Proposition 218 was approved by California voters almost 20 years ago, its interpretations through the courts continue to evolve. So there was a Palmdale case and the San Juan Capistrano case are very important cases for some really detailed technical issues associated with Prop 218. But they are germane, so we're going to run through those. And then who determines when the drought is over and the rate decrease goes into effect? Because the proposed ordinance has the rate increase for the drought, and then the idea, again, is that once the drought is over, then we would have a new normal, and those rates would go back down. So who determines when the rate is when the drought is over and the rate decrease would go into effect? And then under other questions and statements, is the general manager's salary causing the need for the rate increase? The proposed decrease in water rates as proposed in the ordinance needs to stay in and not be deleted. That was a comment that I got from somebody who does business here in the community who liked the fact that the ordinance specifically identified the decrease that would go into the drought, but had some concern that board final action might take the decrease out, you know, and that's the idea. We don't want to, basic comment was no bait and switch here, that decrease needs to stay in the final ordinance. Another question, and this is one I got from Kiwanis on Monday, does OCSD have a water conservation incentive program? And then the other one from Kiwanis is, why are we being told to conserve water and raise rates at the same time? So I'm going to take each of the categories sort of one at a time. With respect to the fiscal questions, can the budget be cut to avoid the rate increase? And my quick answer is, well, we're going to discuss expenditure analysis in a second here because I have a number of graphs, and I want to spend a little bit of time on this. These graphs come out of the water system rate analysis. These graphs were part of what you reviewed at your workshop in February, but certainly this is the core of the discussion, so I want to run through those graphs again in a second. Next question was, is the water fund budget going to be balanced? And the answer is yes. Obviously, that budget balancing is going to be, we're about to enter in the cycle of the budget, but the proposal will provide your board with the ability to adopt a balanced budget in 2015 and 2016? And then how long will the districts, and then that was what I got, the question was the districts, and I've really struck it and I've rephrased it now. How long will the water fund financial reserves last if the budget is not balanced? And the reason why I'm kind of clarifying this point, that it's not just about the district, it's about a water fund, because it's important to recognize that out of all of the revenues that your board is responsible for, you do not have the freedom to spend, you know, all of them on the water fund. Water fund revenues, when we collect water bills, those have to be spent. When we collect sewer revenues, we can't spend those on water. And then, of course, the normal property taxes that we get in are substantially dedicated to the Five Cities Fire Authority, with a little bit of it being used for street lighting. But the point here is we're really focused in on the water fund. The water fund is the budget of the district that has a significant deficit associated with it and where more immediate action is necessary. Obviously, as Chief Lieberman had discussed in his presentation, he's identified issues associated with the Five Cities Fire Authority that are things that the Five Cities Fire Authority needs to work on. But overall, the Oceano CSD's budget is in good and balanced shape, and the challenge is specific than just to the water fund. So again, I restated that question of how long will the water fund financial reserves last if the budget is not balanced, and it's one of those answers that it depends. And even public comment earlier today touched on it a little bit, and that is that it depends on if new development fees continue to subsidize the operating budget. So what we have seen in prior years is we've seen that new development fees will come in and they've helped to subsidize the operating budget when our normal revenues are down. We've also know that over the last several years, the district sold water to the city of Arroyo Grande to the tune of around $150,000 a year, I believe. And that revenue source is not currently part of the water fund budget as well. So there is unpredictability associated with new development fees, and there is the revenues that had been previously obtained from the city of Arroyo Grande that are not part of the picture anymore. So again, the question on how long will the financial reserves last if the budget is not balanced, it's really going to depend on what is the extent of the one-time revenues and really from new development that might come in, very unpredictable resource. If they don't come in, then I've also restated the question, how long can the water fund continue to pay its bills, and then what? And that's what I think is the more important question, is how long can the water fund continue to pay its bills? Because it's not a long-term, even in our best estimates of what our financial reserves are, they're still only a fraction of the annual operating budget. So this district's the water fund is not in a situation where it can continue to run a deficit for any stretch of the imagination. So going back to the, can the budget be cut to avoid the rate increase? Because that is a very important question to address. And so I've got four different graphs, and starting from these first two on left to right. What the first one does is it shows what the revenue picture is. And the black line that we have here was the targeted revenues when in 2011 when the current rate structure was adopted. The yellow line is indication of where we're tracking right now, and certainly we know that it's because of reductions in consumption and water conservation, that those two things go hand in hand. We calculate water bills based on how much people use. So as consumption goes down, the water bills go down. Now, the other thing that's important for clarification purposes is that we're not just saying, hey, we need to make up the difference here. It's not just a revenue side of the equation. But the district's needs have been projected to be much greater. And the green line is reflective of the Tuckfield analysis that was done in 2010. And certainly that particular analysis came under scrutiny by the Board of Directors in 2010 when it chose to adopt the rates that it did. And so I'm not saying that I'm absolutely not saying that the board should have adopted those higher rates. But what it does do and what the details of that Tuckfield analysis show is that there are some needs above and beyond the rate structure that was adopted. And so how are we going to tackle those additional needs? And does this particular rate increase tackle all of the district needs? And the answer is, as proposed, no, it doesn't. However, if we get the operating budget to balance, and then new development fees can be dedicated to the infrastructure needs, then there is a very good likelihood that that significant of an increase that was projected in 2011 would not be needed. So those are good comparisons in order to show the revenue shortfalls that have occurred since 2011, as well as some of the historical analysis that supports the idea that there's additional needs above and beyond what we're talking about. The good news on those additional needs, though, is that, as you can see, we're not talking about a green line that is twice as high as the black line or even 50% higher. That Tuckfield analysis in 2011 was not projecting having to have 50% rate increases after this as a way of addressing infrastructure needs. And we have other local community services districts that are looking at much more significant rate increases because of the need really on the water supply and stuff, whether it's NCSD that's working on their supplemental water project or whether it's Los Osos CSD that's working on their groundwater management plan and what they have to do in coordination with the other purveyors. Those entities are really having to grapple with some significant water supply issues that are going to cost money. But Oceano, in contrast, is not in that situation because those who preceded us, you know, had the vision to make sure that there was groundwater, Lopez water, and state water. So the good news is that when we look to the future, there are some infrastructure issues that need to be addressed, but we also have some, you know, good strategies on how to do that. And they don't have the same immediacy of need as what we're seeing in some of the other communities. So moving from the revenue over to the pie chart, why this is really illustrative is it gets back to the question about how do we cut expenditures in order to balance the budget. And the big blue chunk here, which is almost two-thirds, 64% of our water system budget, is payments for Lopez Water and State Water. Those are what we buy water from. They're under contract. Those are bills that we obtain, and we don't have the ability to cut on those two items. The only option would be to stop paying the bills on them, in which case we would lose the water supply. And that would be the furthest thing from any recommendation that I would ever make. Moving from the cost of our supplemental water, again, almost two-thirds of the budget, into some of the other categories like direct operating expenses, $125,000. That includes our maintenance costs. It includes some of our supply costs. Wages and benefits, $175,000, and that's for a three-person operating crew. As we see in the current year's budget, there's nothing set aside for capital reserves. In debt service, there's about $75,000, and I'll show some comparisons in a little bit where that arguably should be higher, but because most of that, much of that moving forward is going to be intra-fund debt, your board does have the ability to manage that particular component. Others, contingencies, the contingency is actually $5,000 out of that $127,000 pie. And the biggest single chunk under other is over $50,000 that we've budgeted for NCMA, Northern Cities Management Area, and that's part of the cost that we are compelled to have to pay for groundwater management that came out of the stipulations. Admin and indirect, this is the chunk that covers, you know, our utilities, our office staff on a proportional basis. Our admin allocations are allocated to all of the funds. They're allocated to fire, to water, to wastewater. So this is the share of the water district's funds. And then there's a little bit minor capital of $7,000 in the current year budget, and that's part of the meter replacement program. Overall, then, we have a significant portion of the budget that simply does not have the ability to be cut because we're paying it out for things that are buying water from the county or complying with the groundwater stipulations. And overall, there's you know, really relatively little. In comparison to last year, your board did reduce the budget from last year to the current year. But the ability to make up you know, the size of a deficit that we're seeing just simply doesn't exist when we evaluate the expenditures and the cost of operating the water system. So a little bit more in that evaluation here. These two different forms of showing the same numbers. And the graph on the left is the one that stacks up those different segments of the pie. Again, here on surface water, we see that that's the most significant cost that we're incurring. And the three different bars are the estimates. One is that Tuck Field analysis in 2010. The middle one is what was actually supportive of the ordinance that increased rates in 2011. And those two numbers were pretty close. But look at what we've seen has happened since then, is we've seen an increase in our supplemental water costs, both Lopez and State Water. Those things are coming up, you know, sort of on an inflationary basis, but also there's some additional costs that those systems are incurring in responding to the drought and on their continued operations. So our most significant cost is also the one that we've seen bump up higher than previous year's projections. The other ones individually are relatively small, and you know, they just kind of offset each other. Overall, the other items, the pluses or the minuses, the higher than expected costs or the lower than expected costs are relatively balancing out, and it's really this net increase in our surface water costs that is the reason why the budget is somewhat higher than they projected in 2011. This is a graph where we stack the same costs in a different way. So this is the Tuck Field analysis in 2010, projecting costs at a higher level. The ordinance was adopted to collect less. It deferred some of the capital infrastructure items and some of the reserves. And then this is where we have the total budget for 14-15. Again, with the biggest cost that's increases this green, and that relates to State Water. So all of this, these graphs are in the water system rate analysis, and it's my hope that when people actually take a look at this type of a detail, and they recognize that, you know, the guys who are out in the field and those direct labor costs, it's only a three-person crew. And just like Fire Chief Lieberman was talking about staffing levels at the fire department and how tight they can be, Tony and his guys are doing a great job out in the field, but again, there's only three of them, and that's all that's incorporated in the budget right now, and that's all we have moving forward with as well. So the opportunity for budget cuts in order to make up for the deficit is simply not there in any significant way. Moving then into some of the Proposition 218 technical questions. Can the rate increase be deferred until long-term infrastructure improvements can be included? And in my answer, I said I wanted to discuss the difference between operating funds and capital projects or debt service. Because when we consider the needs of a water system, you know, the day-to-day operations are one thing, and then the long-term infrastructure or the capital replacement programs are another thing. And just like we know that we can defer maintenance on a car for a certain period of time, we know we can't defer it forever. But we can't even have a car unless we've got our basic home budget taken care of. And that's the situation why what we're here in Oceano right now, is that basic operating budget has to be balanced in order to then be able to address the other needs. And the good thing, as I mentioned before, is that if we address the operating budget and get that balance, the ability then to use the new development fees and save them for infrastructure is going to be much more feasible. And that is a much better financial approach. Deferring the rate increase until long-term infrastructure improvements can be included would simply at this point in time be perpetuating a deficit, and it would be digging the community into a greater hole that would have to then dig out. Also, because the infrastructure needs are not water supply per se, and one of the members of the public commented that we have leaky pipes. Well, all water systems have leaky pipes, and certainly those do need to be addressed. Right now, if one of our pipes is leaking, then it happens that that water goes right back into the groundwater basin, and so we incur the cost of pumping it. But it's not lost as if it went through a leaky toilet and then out to the sand district and out to the ocean. So when we think about leaks in a water system, we really have to distinguish between water that is lost forever versus water that's kind of recirculating. Now, those leaks we do need to do the infrastructure improvements, but I do believe that they can be planned rationally. And when the community is facing a drought and a financial issue right now, the question is, we need to tackle those issues now so that we can then progressively plan and tackle the infrastructure issues. Next question, how does the district's tiered rate structure compare to San Juan Capistrano? And so the quick answer here is that we're going to discuss the San Juan Capistrano case and the Palmdale case and the need to, what I think the courts are calling, harmonizing drought rates, Water Code Section 372, and tiered rates and the requirements of Prop 218. Again, nice technical issue that I'll go to in a minute. The third question then here is, who determines when the drought is over and the rate decrease goes into effect? And the answer is, that's your board for the purposes of this ordinance and the rate increase. Now, we know that the governor will at some point in time, hopefully nearer term as opposed to further out in the future, make the declaration that the drought is over in California. The County Board of Supervisors has declared one for the county of San Luis Obispo. And so it's possible that the governor could say that the state as a whole is out of the drought, but we still have an emergency within the county of San Luis Obispo. Point being is that the governor and the county are going to be making their independent determinations of when the drought is over, and your board will make that determination for Oceano and for the purposes of the rate decrease. Because we know that Oceano is overall in a better water supply situation than a lot of the other agencies in San Luis Obispo County, it could be possible that you declare it over for Oceano before the county declares it over for the county as a whole. I'm not going to draw that conclusion right now because that would be speculative. We have to see, are we going to get rain even next year? But the basic still bottom line is that it is your board that will make that determination for the community of Oceano and the impact on the rates and the decrease that will happen. So moving into the San Juan Capistrano and tiered rate structures, the heart of this is the ability and how do we go about adopting tiered rate structures. And that is, if you look up on the internet, San Juan Capistrano rate analysis, you will find lots of arguments or lots of articles that identify that San Juan Capistrano's tiered rates were deemed to be not legal, or statements of that extent. And some will speculate that that means that tiered rate structures themselves but aren't legal. But that's not what they're doing. They're specifically addressing the implementation of tiered rate structures for San Juan Capistrano. And in the Palmdale case, then it was somewhat similar. But what I've done on this slide here is, first off, I want to just do a little bit of comparison of what we're talking about in tiered rate structures. So in our current ordinance, we have a range of $2.25 per CCF. A CCF is 100 cubic feet of water, 748 gallons. And then it goes up to $2.95. And it's applied at different tiers. So I'm not getting into that detail because we're not doing a specific detailed comparison of our rates to San Juan Capistrano's. Right now, I want to illustrate a point to preface some of the future slides. So our current has tiered rates of $2.25 up to $2.95. The drought rates that are in the ordinance go from 3.25 to 3.60 to $4 and $4.20. The post-drought, the decrease that is in the ordinance that would go into effect, would then drop those to 2.25, $2.50, $2.95, and $3.15. And you can see a little bit of the symmetry here that I've developed in here, where currently we're at 225, and then in the post-drought we would have a rate at 225. Currently we have a 295, and we would also have a tier in the post-drought at 295. Well, in comparison to these, where the tiered rates are in a relatively tight range, What we see happened in San Juan Capistrano is they went from 247 to 329 to 494, which, you know, on the surface, that's not super wide open, not as tight as our tiers, but then they jumped to $9.05. And I guess sort of anecdotally, I'm not surprised that San Juan Capistrano had a legal challenge when they went from $4.94 up to $9.05 in their tiered rates. That kind of these are always difficult issues to work through, but to make that kind of a jump is certainly going to invite some challenges, I guess.
It's really steep.
Yeah, it's pretty steep. So what is the San Juan Capistrano challenge? So there's a little bit of a background, 3 points on a background. Tiered water rate structures are allowable pursuant to Water Code Section 372. Mm-hmm. So our water code talks to us that we can do tiered rates, we can do conservation rate structures. However, and it's a big however, water rates must also be proportional pursuant to Proposition 218. And that proportional thing is that it's a one sentence or something in Prop 218. There's really no legislative guidance on how to do proportional analysis under Prop 218. The contrast under Prop 218 is that in assessments, they provide much more guidance. First, in assessments, they say you have to have a registered professional engineer do a benefit analysis. You can only assess the special benefits. You cannot count general increases in property values as being a benefit or as being a special benefit. So Prop 218 gives, I believe, really good guidance to engineers on how to do the special benefit analysis. But when we turn to property-related fees and there has to be a proportional analysis, Prop 218 itself doesn't provide as much guidance. And as a result, what we're seeing is the courts we're seeing this in the courts. And what Jeff has been educating me on, and Jeff, if I get any of this wrong, you make sure to, slap me and take the mic away. But basically, the courts are looking for agencies to harmonize the two laws, and those are Water Code Section 372 and the ability to adopt conservation and tiered rates with Proposition 218 and this proportional allocation theory that's in there. So what are the two theories that I think are sort of right in our face in trying to address this? One is on proportional. Economically, cost of services will tend to go down, not up, as people use more water. We see that in manufacturing. We see that throughout. It's economies of scale that when we can develop economies of scale through mass production or greater units sold, the cost per unit goes down. However, we're looking at rate increases then or tiered rates that would seemingly cause somebody's cost to go up over time. So what is it that would justify a higher cost for higher usage? And that's because also in economics, we know that at some point in time, if you have a manufacturing plant and you can produce 1,000 widgets, well, at some point in time, you've maxed out that manufacturing plant, and you have to add on to it or you have to incur some additional costs in order to produce more units. And so in the water system, where do we see that? We see that as in the additional water supply that we have to buy in order to accommodate the higher water users. And the third water supply for OCSD that was purchased is state water, and it is needed in part as a result of higher demand. What I'll walk through in a minute, though, is that it's also needed to help with the overall water system reliability. So the costs that are in the water system rate analysis has not proposed to allocate 100% of state water costs through tiered rates, but a portion of the cost. So those are our two competing theories again. One is that as you have greater demand, economies of scale tell us costs should go down. However, because of high demand, we do incur additional costs, and so then how do we take those two theories and harmonize them in a way to bring Water Code Section 372 and Proposition 218 together? And I believe that we're in a very good situation here, and I want to walk through that in a second. One of the other important points that Councillor Minery and I went through is this idea of establishing an administrative record. So we have a water system rate analysis, and it provides a lot of good information as the basis and the reasons and the things that we needed to identify in that notice that we sent to residents and property owners. But what I've been advised is it's the administrative record that has been especially challenging for both San Juan Capistrano as well as Palmdale, because when they got challenged legally and they went into the court, they didn't have the record to defend themselves, and lacking a record, I don't know, Jeff, were they just kind of walking in there with unarmed?
In that type of court proceeding, the reviewing judge is limited to the administrative record and can't go outside other than certain exceptions what the administrative record is for that decision, because it was based upon that record that the board made the decision that they made. So that's the importance of the record.
So now that we're in the Prop 218 process, part of this then is to provide this additional level of details to obviously boost up our administrative record. So how did we go about then? Where are we at today, and how did we go about establishing the OCSD rates? And the fact of the matter is we have multiple different components to our rate structure. And so I'm going to run through some of them. The Lopez charges, we call them supplemental charge, and in the proposed rates, they are tied directly to consumption. It's $1.54 per unit per CCF, and that amount is tied right to what the proposed Lopez budget is. So proportional based on consumption, unit for unit, tied in really directly at $1.54. In the rate decrease, because after the drought, we would expect consumption to go back up, that $1.54 drops to about $1.23. But again, it's proportional directly based on consumption. We have meter charges and base rates, and those are proportioned based on the size of the meter. The idea being there is that, especially on the commercial side, if you have a larger meter, you can place higher instantaneous demand on the water system, and so those formulas were developed in prior years, but basically proportioned based on the size of the meter. For multiple unit properties, whether it's multiple units in a commercial or multiple residential, when we have multiple units, they obtain their water through one meter. Everybody is proportioned. Each unit pays the same base rate, and how much water they're allowed to use is proportionally increased. So, as an example, on a single-family residence where they get 6 units for the base rate, if they have a double duplex, they pay double the base rate, but they also get double 6 units. They get 12 units. And at each tier, they get double the number of water units. And so that is also clearly a proportional type of rate allocation. Really,
they're not penalized for stepping outside the tier. They have to. So the people who stay within their tier, their regular tier.
So if I'm a duplex, I have to pay double the base rate because I have two units. But I get double the water at every tier too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
that's proportioned, and again, that's based on pre-existing district approach on this. And so then the question becomes, okay, well, what's left and what's allocated to the tiers then? And I had already sort of indicated what we were talking about. So this is in the water system rate analysis, and I'm not expecting anybody to read it. But for anybody who's listening and wants to study that water system rate analysis, these are what you want to look to, because this is the information that will tell you much. And what I have in this area here is the estimate of revenues that we're going to collect from all the tiers. And then it shows in this area amount from base rates versus the amount from tiers. And what I did there then is said, okay, from the tiers, that's targeted to collect approximately 3/4 or approximately 75% of the state water costs, leaving about 25% of the state water costs collected through the base rate. Now, the base rate pays for all of the operating costs. It pays for the debt service costs that we saw, our admin allocation costs. So the base rates pay for all of our fixed costs plus approximately 25% of our state water costs. And the application of theory there is that state water does improve our overall water system reliability, and a portion of that should be covered through the base rates. So this is the analysis in the water systems rate analysis that shows the amount of revenues that we would be collecting from each of the individual, from the tiered rate structures. So they've been targeted to collect about $688,000. Our state water project costs in 2015 are approximately $900,000. Therefore, the tiers are targeted to cover about 75%. And I made these points already. The base rates will cover the rest of the 25%, as well as 100% of the water fund operating administrative debt service costs. Now what I want to get to is this final graph on this thing with proportionality, because I think this is very strong evidence that we are very much working within the economies of scale. Because what this graph illustrates is what is the average cost per unit that our customers pay at different levels of consumption. And in all situations, that goes down. So even though we have a base rate that slightly nudges up a little bit, and I believe that that's appropriate because that as you continue to increase your usage, you have additional incremental demands on water service, and so having not just one tier, but you know a few tiers in there that again consistent with Water Code 372 and the ability to do tiered and conservation-oriented rates. But the harmonization here with Prop 218 that I believe we have here is that this shows the average cost per unit, and it's always going down. And one of the points to remember is that if I use 40 units of water and that 40th unit is costing me $4.20, I don't get to use that 40th unit until I've bought the other 39 units. And that's what this graph helps to illustrate. And I'm going to walk through it really briefly. If I use zero water and I have to pay that base rate because I was out of town for 2 months or whatever, right? Maybe I had a vacation home and I still have a meter on, but I didn't use any water. Well, that cost is an infinity cost, right? Because I'm paying $45 divided by zero because I use no water, and that approaches affinity. Well, I can't show affinity on the graph, so I showed one. And at that base rate with one unit of water, that one unit is costing almost $50. Well, once I use two units, I cut that in about half, and three units, I come down further. And so at six units, I'm essentially paying about $9.25 a unit. At 40 units, I'm paying about $6 per unit. And where this line essentially bottoms out as you draw it out further and further into the unit is that the average cost per unit drops down to about $5.75 per unit. But this, to me, and is very much illustrated of economies of scale, that as more units are being used, their cost per unit is going down. And the point is that when we look at the water system rate structures and the various components to the rate structures, the courts aren't saying that you have to show me dollar for dollar exactly what you're doing. What they're using is this concept of harmonizing. That how is it that the rate structure you're proposing makes sense? And to me, this graph that illustrates cost going down on an average per unit basis is what really makes sense in harmonizing Water Code 372 with the proportionality requirements of Prop 218. Now, who did I get that question from? Because the questions that I listed were from a whole bunch of different people. That question came from the CSD general managers because my last monthly meeting with them, you know, it's like, well, what are you doing? Well, we're in the Prop 218 process. Well, what are you doing about harmonizing, you know? So it's one of those sort of almost nerdy questions that you get. It's hard for me to imagine that.
Almost?
Yeah. It's really important because it's current cases and stuff, but you know, I've known of this issue since Prop 218 was adopted. I worked on the county's first Prop 218 analysis with County Council back in 1997. It does take time for these things to get into courts. I think that what we're doing is on a really good track. It's still being interpreted by the courts, though. Mm-hmm. And so no one can ever say that anything is perfect. The Stanford article that I attached to the staff report, I thought did a really good job of discussing the issue. If in the future this becomes a very untenable situation for water agencies, because something like two-thirds of the water agencies in California are using tiered rate structures, if it becomes a big challenge, then I think what water districts will be looking for is to go back to the legislature and to obtain guidance on proportionality.
Oh, they might be getting from the courts.
Just so you get a sense of the work Pablo and I have been doing on analyzing this and understanding this, the Capistrano case that he spent quite a bit of time going over, and that did direct our analysis and we used as guidance, is still on appeal currently, and there still has not been a decision handed down from the Court of Appeals. So the trial court ruling was in late 2013. We're still in the appellate court in there, so we are trying to make sure that we are taking all the guidance that we can get to make sure that we are fair and on point and within the guidance that we have.
No, I think it's an excellent staff report. Would you mind if I took public comment?
There's just a quick wrap-up.
Okay.
I have a couple on the other questions and statements.
Okay.
So is the general manager's salary causing the need for the rate increase? And the answer is no. That was really addressed when your board interviewed me and went through all the pluses and minuses of costs, but we know that, no, the GM's salary is not driving the need. We also know that I'm on a four-year limited-term contract, and so all of the long-term analysis is going to be based on an organizational structure after we get things back on the right track. The proposed decrease in water rates as proposed needs to stay in, and the response is we agree, and that's the reason why we included it. Does OCSD have a water conservation incentive program? The answer is no, not yet. I'll just remind everybody that the rate structure is based on 20% conservation. Already the community is at 10.85%, so we're over halfway there. And so if 20% conservation is not obtained, then we will collect additional revenues, and what's incorporated into the ordinance is those additional revenues would then be specifically targeted for conservation incentive programs. Makes a lot of sense, because if we don't get to our 20% conservation and we get a little bit extra money, then that money needs to be put into conservation so we get to the 20%. So well structured there, and good policy guidance from your board, of course. And then the last one, why are we being told to conserve water and raise rates at the same time? And that's sort of the catch-22, right? Because
yeah.
It feels like the double whammy to people. I have to conserve, and then you're going to increase my rates. But we also have to remember that those two calculations go hand in hand, right? If you're going to conserve, we need conservation. That means the rates are going to go down. What we're really doing here is talking about the revenue target that was established in 2011 plus 3.5%, and that yet is still less than some of the infrastructure needs, but that longer-term effort of infrastructure is well within the ability of the district to manage and to move forward on without significant impacts to the community in the future. The need to be able to start using those new to development fees and set them aside for the infrastructure is something that we'll be able to start doing once we take this first step. So with that, it does conclude my presentation.
Okay.
And I appreciate your patience.
So I thought what I would do is do some public comment if people have questions and stuff, and then the board can comment afterwards. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, because I know that, you know, it's getting late and people have been here a long time. So is there anybody from the public who would like to speak on this issue? Julie?
Wow, that's a lot to take in.
And thank you, Pavel, because I think there were a lot of questions, and there'll be more. And maybe if we had had that special meeting videotaped and done a presentation like this at the kickoff, maybe we could have headed some of them off. Mary, I wanted to thank you for not sticking to the six-minute rule. I think I always feel like I'm here to help you guys and ask questions, yes. But I didn't ask the most expensive question, and that was about San Juan Capistrano, because Mr. Minery's been spending some time on that one. I did have a question. In your pie chart, you point to the $7,000 for capital. It's such a small number. I had thought that this year the budget included the backup generator. And is that $7,000 the only portion of the water fund's contribution to that? I know it's multi. It's going to be paid for by more than one fund. Then you also mentioned the lack of revenue from the Arroyo Grande contract. And that was $157,000 that you had for 5 years. Something you said earlier tonight about your sister agencies looking for other sources of water. Arroyo Grande conserved their way out of that contract. They actually saved the 100-acre feet that they were buying from you. And I think you remember they asked you to not deliver it, but they would still pay for it that the fourth year. So I think that's something to look at as a great conservation efforts going on next door. One of the public commenters earlier tonight talked about your efforts in recycled water as a district. We're not there yet, and you have a large complement of water sources. You don't need recycled water in Oceano right now. If Mr. Ogren could explain, because somebody else brought up in public comment, the Standard & Poor's rate reduction and the Zone 3 partners, and how does that affect, cause and effect Oceano? Did Oceano cause it? And then you talked about leaks and that you're just recycling it through the ground. I don't think that's a fair statement. It's not a bank. You can't store the water that leaks out of those pipes. You might pump some of that up should you be pumping groundwater, but if you receive your full deliveries of your state in Lopez, you're paying top dollar for that water that's leaking out of the pipes. If you don't mind, I'll just wrap up. If in the future we showed production and consumption charts and track the amount of water that's leaking, then we could quantify it with dollars and show that to the ratepayer in your future rate increases to show that you're going to recover that money by not leaking that water.
Thank you. So just go ahead. There's just one thing I would like to comment on. Julian, all your points are well taken, is that I think Oceano has thought of themselves more regional than just an encapsulated area that has done good planning on accessing and holding on to our water sources. So although Oceano may be in a good position, the South County as a whole regionally is not in a good position. So if Oceano has the ability to help make a recycled program happen, it's the right thing to do. It's not just what's best for us, but what's best for the South County. So I just wanted to say that recycle is important for all. Yes, may you please state your name
Linda
for the record.
Linda Austin. I'm an Oceano resident, a ratepayer in Oceano. And I want to thank you very much for that presentation. And I know there was talk about the general manager's salary. And I just want to say that after seeing that, you see you get what you pay for, and we're getting what we pay for. We have, like, the best general manager we've had in a very long time. And I feel very much support what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're bringing this community back. You know, this whole board, the staff here, everybody here works so great. I'm so happy to still live here and be alive in Oceano because it's a wonderful community. And I support everything that you're doing. I know it's for the best. We're going to get through all this and become even a lot better. So thank you, all of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Austin. Does anybody else like to comment, sir? Would you like to say anything? No.
I'd just piggyback on President Lucy's comments, though, about AG and Grover. They, last discussions I had, were still actively looking for supplemental water supplies. And when I had very informal discussions with them about, well, we'll sell you water, and they said, well, make it permanent.
Yeah.
Because I can't.
Yeah.
And so
that was my understanding, too, is that Arroyo Grandes did want that water and that
they still want it. They just want it permanently.
And that at the beginning of it was $100,000, and then at some point into the contract it increased.
Right.
So, President Lucy, if I might, first, thank you, Ms. Austin. I appreciate those comments. And with regard to some of Ms. Tacker's comments, I think that all of them warrant some good responses. The $7,000 was simply the minor amount put together for meter replacement program. Some of my other comments, especially like with respect to leaks, my hope there was to provide more of a balanced comment on leaks. One of the individuals who spoke earlier in public comment, in my opinion, had sort of made some relatively harsher comments about leaks. And in a more balanced approach, we know that all water systems have leaks associated with them. And what I was in discussing it on a balanced approach, there is a difference between, you know, leaks that go back into the groundwater versus leaks that, you know, go through the sand district and out to the ocean and it's lost forever. The idea of a good leak detection program and fixing leaks when we find them is extremely important. And in the short 8 months that I've been here, there have been numerous occasions when Tony and the guys have been out there, they've found a leak, they've cut up the pavement, they've gone in there, they've replaced the lines, they're fixing leak after leak after leak. Not every week, but
regularly.
So leak detection is very important. Mm-hmm. With respect to Ms. Tacker's comments of having all the calculations set up so that we can really do a good evaluation of how much water is coming into our system versus how much is being leaked is also important. In fact, that's something that I pushed a couple of years ago on a countywide basis as the County Public Works Director to establish a consistent format for all agencies in the county to monitor their leaks. And that is something that I know County Public Works is still asking for everybody through the Regional Water Management Group and the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. And we are doing that in the last several months as I've been looking at our details. We need to do a little bit of work on how we're compiling the data to make sure that it's super accurate. But we are doing that leak detection and that leak evaluation, and it is very important. With regard to S&P that downgraded the Lopez bonds, they identified liquidity issues or the lack, you know, the poor financial reserves, lack of cash for Oceano. But in their downgrading, they didn't come forward and say that's specifically why they downgraded. Mm-hmm. So they did identify Oceano. Now, that does bring us to another point, which is our contractual compliance. And both on Lopez and on State Water, we have promised through contracts to set minimum rates. And we're not in compliance right now. There's a good likelihood that even after this, we're not going to quite be in compliance, but that also is going to be somewhat dependent. So that is a future issue we need to evaluate some more. But this is the first step. That's the most important step that we need to be moving forward. The AG contract and sister agencies and AG's conservation, as well as Grover, both of those communities have been doing really good jobs at water conservation. which is why at the last Zone 3 meeting, I brought up specifically now what are we doing in Oceano in order to, you know, take the next steps in our conservation efforts. But both of the communities have. Those two communities, though, are at a bit of a disadvantage when they don't have the three sources of water available to them. So kudos to them for the conservation efforts that they have been doing. So I thought there was some good points that Ms. Tacker brought up, and I wanted to respond to those. In terms of the next update, I can certainly make it more brief, but what I have heard today from both public comment and and from your board is the idea of what's happened over the last couple of years and what's the reserve status. So far we've been focusing on revenues and expenses, and it's with the basic understanding that our reserves are relatively low as they are. But I can certainly come back to the next update and provide a little bit more in terms of reserve projections and be glad to do that.
I might just have a couple questions. Did you have any questions?
No.
Matt?
No.
Just a couple things. First of all, go ahead.
I was just confirming with council. That might be appropriate right now for a quick motion to extend the meeting.
Mm-hmm. I so move. I move we extend the meeting.
No later than 10.
No later than 10 p.m. So.
You want me 2/3 vote?
I'll second that.
I'll vote in favor of it.
Aye.
Okay. So very quickly, can you just list a couple? Do we have any new sources of money that have come in the past year? Sources that are not included in past years?
Yes. For the water fund specifically, the State Water Board announced a grant of about $120,000 to help with rehabilitation of well number 5.
Great.
Off of water fund and into the garbage fund. Shortly after I came on board, and the county provided money and the garbage company provided us money for the county provided us money because franchise fees associated with Halcyon had mm-hmm. been given to the county and not Oceano CSD, so we got that money back to Oceano.
Great.
And on the garbage-related revenues, there had been some fees that they were supposed to be paying us under the contract, but every contract's different between all the different agencies, and it was a unique feature that they forgot.
Conveniently.
So anyways, I think in terms of the garbage revenues that we've gotten in this year that weren't anticipated, it's in excess of $50,000.
Okay.
That is off the top of my head. And then the grant of 121 means that we're having about $170,000 of unanticipated revenues this year. But again, none of that is dedicated for water fund operating expenses.
Right. And so a couple of the questions were is that where could we cut back in our operating budgets and stuff like that? And so one area that keeps getting left out is that when I started coming to the board, the engineer was the district engineer was always at the table, and it was a cost of between $4,000 to $12,000 a month, and that's not occurring now because we have representation from somebody who's knowledgeable regarding engineering and what's needed in the district.
Although, Madam President, I need to interject real quickly.
Go ahead.
I'm not an engineer, so.
No, I'm not saying you are. I said knowledge. Okay. I'm sure every word is twisted. and then also, too, is that we haven't put money out for a grant writer, even though applications have gone in. So those are things I look at as cost savings that we've attempted to do. And I could go on and on with all the other little petty stuff.
So there is no recommendation. This was an update, and at the next meeting I can address some of the other questions that we see coming forward. And, of course, hopefully people will be able to come out to the open house on April 11th on Saturday to talk to us about the questions that they have on their minds.
And that's at the Oceano Depot, correct?
Correct.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Receive and file.
Did we determine
when individual board members could come so that we might not all be there at the same time.
What Celia and I can do, or with Marie, is we can seek input from your board members as to the times that you're interested in coming, because I think it's a good idea to keep it to no more than two board members at any particular hour.
So I'll take late afternoon.
Okay. So we'll schedule that. And we have a close...
And Jen will take it with me.
What is it?
Okay, moving right along. Oh, gosh, where am I?
We're at...
Hearing items.
Yes.
There's no hearing items, no utility items. And do we want to do the last public comment before we go into closed session?
Yes, public comment on closed session items.
So, is there... Julie, do you have anything you'd like to comment on? Okay, so Ms. Tacker had no comments on this public comment.
Would you like me to read us out to closed session?
Yes, please.
All right. Closed session item 13A, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9A, conference with legal counsel regarding Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria et al. Item B, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D4, conference with legal counsel to determine whether to initiate litigation. Number of cases, 1.
Okay, great. All right. And we will come back out and
estimated
report.
Time, 10 minutes.
Yeah. We'll come back out and report and adjourn at that time. Okay, we've just returned from closed session. Mr. Minery, do you have anything to report?
The report out of closed session is no reportable action.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
I'll move to adjourn.
Any closing comments? Oh. None. Hearing none. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. So moved. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.